Blog Talk Radio.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man. You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the major shit. Let's go hook him up!
By my co-host Contreras. What's going on, Contreras?
Not much. What's going on, man?
Not too much, man. Just trying to maneuver my way through a busy I-35 to get home to my laptop. What's going on with you?
Not too much.
About the same as always, I take it.
Yes.
Yeah. So since our other co-host is under orders from his wife to attend some family event or something. Do we have anyone join us today, or is it just going to be us?
We have somebody that might pop in here in a little bit.
Okay. I think this person is probably a jerk or so.
I wouldn't say that. Not if I want him to call in.
Well, he's a jerk. I'm not even sure who it is, but either way, they're probably a jerk. But anyway, we'll go ahead and last week we did what we always do. We picked a topic that there was no way in hell we could ever get through in one episode. And like always, that happened. And we didn't even come close. I don't know. We got like about halfway, I think.
Maybe 2005.
Yeah, so we got 6-7 years. So maybe we can fit that in 2 hours here. So I set it for 2 hours.
The good thing about WWE Hall of Fame is there's some of these people that are actually in this Hall of Fame haven't done much, so we can skip over them.
Yeah, I guess you could kind of say that. But actually, some of those are the most interesting ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, so like last week, I forgot where we got up to, but...
I think we ended with 2004, and we're starting on 2005.
Okay, well, since I'm not in front of my laptop here, why don't you go ahead and call up the first name?
The first name is some guy named Hulk Hogan.
Some guy named Hulk Hogan who lost a lawsuit today or something.
It has something to do with his ex-wife or something. I don't know.
There's multiple lawsuits. Yeah, there's multiple ones, and I think Dave described this as not one of the more important ones or something.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's always a big mess, but.
It's not the one where he's suing her for calling him gay or something like that with Bruce Beefcake.
Probably. It's probably something like that. Hey, at least it ain't Bruce in that video. You know what I mean? That would have been all fucked up, and that's the video that would have came out.
Yeah. Hey, he should let him market that. He could probably use the money.
He'd make a shitload of money off of that fucking DVD. Everybody's going to want to watch the Hulkster do a porno.
I wouldn't be surprised if this was his own video that he accidentally, that somebody quote unquote stole. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He
kind of
put it up there himself.
Yeah, just put it out there to somebody else so he can always claim innocence. You know what I mean? And still.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in some ways, I think that would even you know, I think more people, if there's controversy, more people would even be apt to see it than normal, because, like, it's like Hulk Hogan doing it. Yeah, there would be a lot of people to do it, but, you know, it's like if Hulk Hogan comes out and say, I'm against it or whatever, it's, you know, causes controversy, and more people are like, well, we got to watch the video to see what the hell's going on, you know, so. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't doubt it.
It's weird,
I mean,
because I have this perverse thing about, I probably would watch a Hulk Hogan porn tape. I don't know why I say that, but I don't know. It's weird. It's Hulk Hogan.
Yeah. Right? But, you know, it's sad because if all the wrestlers, the one guy who shouldn't be broke, the one guy who should still have plenty of money is Hulk Hogan. I mean, it's actually kind of got kind of sad. It's too bad his wife, I guess she was always a bitch, but too bad she turned into more of a bitch the last few years. And,
that car accident started him kind of on the road to ruin, it seems.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, but, I mean, you can't have any kind of a Wrestling Hall of Fame and not have Hulk Hogan in it. I mean, you know, is there anything we really have to say about Hulk Hogan? I mean, really?
No, I mean, you know, he and Steve Austin, there's always compared to, like, the two biggest stars. I still think Hulk Hogan's the biggest star of all time.
Because he had a longer career, you know, because Austin was bigger in a shorter period.
Yeah,
but,
he was only,
you know,
like,
in the long haul,
like, maybe what, maybe four years or so?
4 or 5 years, yeah. And a lot of people would kind of throw The Rock in there. But the thing is, The Rock, you know, yes, he went on to become a super mega a movie star. But he was, you know, the number two guy, but it was always Stone Cold. Stone Cold was always number one when they were together. You know what I mean? It's become more people, I think people kind of like, I don't think fantasize is the right word about it, but people kind of look back with fonder thoughts of what The Rock brought. I mean, yes, The Rock was big, and he was a superstar, and he was the second most over guy, sometimes the most over guy, but he also, you know, Stone Cold had a lot to do with The Rock, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, okay, there's not much, we can't say, there's nothing really to go through. Everybody knows why he's in here, so.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's like, it would take forever to even talk about his credential.
And, I mean, I was always, you know, I was never one of these, like, smart marks, you know, God, Hulk Hogan, he's terrible. I never thought Hogan was terrible in the ring. He did, he did his shtick, and he did it well, so.
Well, you have people who have this snobbish mentality, like our co-host Craig, about work rate, and that only... And the only thing that you have to have, like, 100% work rate to be, like, any good whatsoever, or they'll snicker when they mention someone's name. Hulk Hogan, yes, he did not wrestle like Davey Richards. He did not do a thousand suplexes, dropping people on their head, or, you know, all this crazy shit. But what he did looked good. His punches looked good. His body slams looked good. His clotheslines looked good. His leg drop looked good. That's all he needed.
Yeah. I mean, people make fun of a leg drop, but that's some bitch. I mean, with his move, it was over. He beat everybody.
Dude, yeah, I mean, he was a big... It's not like he was some little dude, you know, Ricky Morton doing a leg drop.
He's
a fucking Hulk Hogan.
Yeah,
he's a big, big dude. You know, and he was a kick of death, too. You know what I mean? It wasn't just a leg drop. And, you know...
I mean, people have this... go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, to me, working the crowd is a bigger part of work rate than being able to hit 5 suplexes in a minute. You know, just because you're in shape doesn't mean that you're a great worker. Being able to control the crowd and do... If Paul Hogan could do a match, throw 2 punches, 1 kick, and a leg drop, and have the place go crazy. And you can have guys drop their opponent on their head 100 times in a match, and they won't even come anywhere close to it. You know, so.
Yeah, I mean, really, who's the better worker? The one that can go out there and just have, like, this you know, just this awesome, like, 5-star, you know, work rate type match, or the guy that can do less but come out of it making more money? You know, who's better?
Yeah, well, like you just said about more money. There's the point of going to work is to make money.
Yeah.
So, to me, the better worker is the guy who makes the money. So Hulk Hogan is, you know, yes, he's broke now, but he made millions of dollars. Davey Richards makes $500 a show. The big difference in worth you there.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, the person that makes the most money is the one that's the best worker. I mean, people seem to have these two different ideas. Like, some people will say worker is what he does, like, actually, you know, the ability in the ring to do a match. And, you know, other people say worker is the really professional wrestling, you know, your character and how you connect with the crowd is way more important than what you do in the ring, like the technical stuff. So
yeah, exactly. And like people might say, well, like, well, what about
bottom line?
People
that's,
be
that's
like,
what gets over. That's what gets
you
over.
Know, people be like, well, you guys suck. You know, brag, you know, rave about Chris Benoit, and he's like the same way. No, Chris Benoit. Yes, he was great technically in the ring, but he also portrayed the character of he was a bad motherfucker who was gonna fuck somebody up, and he put
and
that
he
aura.
Didn't, he
out
didn't
of
do
his
much
head.
Talking because he didn't have to.
Yeah, he just hit his body language. His body language said he was a killer, even though he was like 4'2", and, you know, his body language said he was a killer. He still had that. He still could. Working is that it's just not moves. It's everything. It's everything. And you know, people don't take that into respect. You know, in retrospect.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So,
move on to next one is Rowdy Roddy Piper. That's another no-brainer.
Yeah. Of course. I remember the first time I ever saw him, dude. Was when I first started watching Georgia. He was. I don't think he was like the full-time color commentator, but he would be there with Gordon Solie. And and pretty much the first thing I remember from him was. He's calling a match with a Bob Armstrong, and he talked about Bob Armstrong having some skinny legs, and this led to the big Bob Armstrong Roddy Piper feud on Georgia TV.
Yeah.
Yeah,
the first time I saw Piper was, I started watching in '85, and first I started watching NWA, but then I found WWF, and that's where like the end of '85 and early '86 was the first time I saw him.
Yeah, and you know, one of the best bad guys of all time.
He was
one
of those guys that didn't really have like a. He really didn't have much of a wrestling style. It's mostly just a brawler.
Yeah, you're right about that. Pretty much, you know. I mean, you know, most of his big moves, the actual wrestling moves, were like stuff like the sleeper. You know.
Yeah. I mean, he didn't have to do much. Which is another thing. He didn't have to do much in the ring, you know. He didn't have to have that ability like we talked about, to, you know, like the work rate ability and working a match or something like that. He didn't need that because, you know, just his who he was and his character got over so well.
Yeah, and what was funny about Piper is every great once in a while, he would just have that awesome blow-away match.
Like with Bret Hart.
Yeah, Bret Hart or the one with Valentine or the one with Goldust.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, there's a little smoke and mirrors in him, but those were great matches.
Yeah, I mean, he kind of reminds me like a guy like The Rock. The Rock didn't really have like a set wrestling style. You know, he could work, but I mean, he just didn't have like a certain style that he worked. You know, it was but you never heard anybody complain about his matches.
Yeah, and I want to send a message to my co-host, Craig. Craig, I just took a piss while we were doing the show, and no one heard the trickling of the water because I was smart enough to put my phone on mute, unlike somebody last week who decided to take a piss, and on the download, it's very audible that where you could hear the fucking piss hitting the sink. So next time, Craig, please hit the damn mute on your phone. It's an iPhone. I know it has a mute button.
Are you serious?
You didn't hear the download? You could hear him pissing.
No, I hadn't heard the download. I listened to it like on my iPhone, a little bit on my iPhone, but I hadn't listened to it like on my regular computer or anything. Yeah. Where to hear better.
Yeah, I always listen to the show just to check out how the audio sounds. And you can hear him pissing, and you can hear him snorker, what do you call it? kind of laughed a little bit about it when he was doing it. I was just like, you unprofessional. You like I said, I was smart enough to put mute on my phone, and I'm the stoner of the group. And, you know, if I can remember, you should. But anyway, back right at Piper.
I would have just set my phone down and gone to the bathroom and not told nobody.
I think he's done that a few times, actually. But the thing with Roddy Piper, is just the I talked about Andre probably has the best overall performance in the movie, but Roddy Piper, to me, is the, like, if you're looking at a guy who's done more than one thing, Roddy Piper is the best. I mean, They Live is fucking awesome. It's an awesome movie. Hell Comes to Frogtown. It's just fucking one of those movies that's just so bad and horrible that it's like one of the greatest movies of all time.
Body Slam.
Body Slam.
That was an awesome movie. I don't care what anybody says.
When the Green Lantern movie came out, they released one of the animated DVDs.
Uh-huh.
And he plays like a some bad guy who likes to, he's like a warrior who's always looking for fights. And he goes to this one planet looking for the Green Lantern that's supposed to be badass. And he spends the whole time running up and down this planet, like, screaming about, come and fight me, and so-and-so. And it turned out that the Green Lantern was the whole planet, so he ended up having to, like, run away and got beat up or whatever. But anyway, it was just like his voice, but he was awesome. I mean, he was just awesome just doing that, acting like a dumbass, running around the planet wanting to fight this Green Lantern. It was fucking awesome.
Yeah. He's also a guy that, you know, he was a major part of that first wrestling boom in the mid-'80s with the whole
Big
Rock and Harlan
connection. Yeah, because he was the main
I mean,
guy.
I go back and watch that
it.
Stuff where he, like, I mean, it started the whole thing where he, like, kicked Cyndi Lauper in Madison Square Garden and body slammed Dave Wolf, who's her manager.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the cops are up in the ring, and, God, it looked like a fucking riot.
Yeah, that was crazy. My favorite Body Piper story is actually from the Ric Flair book, where he talks about, you remember when he lost the belt in Puerto Rico, or like, not Puerto Rico, but one of those little islands.
Like Jake Veneno or somebody like that?
Yeah, that one. So,
yeah.
You know, he like loses his match, and, you know, just like this, so the people went crazy, he decided to, like, go ahead and let the guy win. He wouldn't even take the belt, he was so, like, scared. So they sent him back for the rematch for him to go back to the win. Of course, no one knew about this. Only like the people in that little area, basically. There was no internet. So
yeah.
Ric Flair goes back and Roddy Piper. I don't know if they sent Roddy Piper with him or Roddy Piper just went with him. So Roddy Piper's there, and they're having a match. And I guess Flair throws the guy out, and Piper kind of like throws the guy back in, and the fucking security pulls fucking their AKs. On fucking Roddy Piper. And he's
God.
Outside the net, so, like, Flair's like, he just grabs the guy and tells the guy, pin me. So, once again, Ric Flair is losing to the guy he's not supposed to lose to. So, the guy wins. You know, but this time, you know, when the guy offered to give the title back, Flair took the title. And then, while they're waiting for their plane, they're at the fucking airport bar, and Rick's drinking. And Roddy Piper, because they pay Piper in cocaine.
Oh, God.
So he's there with a Tony Montana big pile of coke in front of him with a big old lion, and he just sticks his head down. And just does a Tony Montana imitation. He comes up with coke on his nose and looks at Rick and says, Rick, I'm getting too old for this shit. Oh, that's awesome. All right. I guess we can do this.
Puerto Rico always sound like the worst place to go to work.
Fuck yeah. They would stab you and throw piss on you and just like all kinds of crazy shit.
Throw diapers with shit in it at you and stuff
yeah.
like that. God.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to. I would never want to go there.
Yeah. Anyway, next we have Cowboy Bob Orton. Again, a big part of the mid-'80s wrestling boom period. He was right there.
It's like there's a theme going on to this Hall of Fame.
Yeah. He's going to keep going. But Bob Orton, I always liked him. He was a very good wrestler.
Yeah, he was always really good. And I guess there's a debate on who was the first person to use the Superflex. It was either him or the Super Destroyer. And
Scott Irwin.
Yeah, Scott Irwin. And yeah, I saw, you know, he wrestled here in San Antonio for a while, and you know, he wrestled all over the place, really.
Yeah, he was big in Crockett. He and I think Don Carnotto were the world tag team champion. He was part of that big angle that putting Ric Flair out with the neck injury that set up the first Starrcade against Harley Race.
Oh yeah, yeah.
When he like kind of promos, I think it was Dick Slater injured Flair, and then Flair cut this promo like the next week and saying he had to retire, but it was all a ruse, and he went after him with a baseball bat or something.
Yeah, yeah. Him and Dick Slater were an awesome tag team.
Yeah.
And they were there, yeah.
You know, one of the biggest stars they have right now, Randy Orton, his son.
Yeah, and he was actually back in the WWF because they found out he had hepatitis C, and then they got pissed off about that.
Johnny Ace almost got fired over that one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think he almost, because, you know, he's one that deals with all the talent and stuff, and so he got the blame for that because he, like, bled all over Undertaker, so... It was the wrong person to bleed hepatitis on.
Yeah.
It's like the worst thing, the worst person you could possibly imagine to fuck with.
Right, yeah, no kidding. No kidding. But yeah, Bob was good. He always had that, he always looked the same, no matter what. With his cowboy hat and his curly hair. He never looked like he was the best in shape guy, but he was in good shape.
He was one of those guys, he could go a long time, and he was technically really, really good. And
yeah.
He had a broken arm for like 3 or 4 years, it seemed like.
I think it's still broken today.
He even brought it back when he made those appearances with his son, when he would interfere in like WrestleMania or something. He'd have the cast on his arm. I thought that was awesome.
yeah, that was pretty cool.
Next we have Jimmy Hart. Another no-brainer for me.
Yeah, one of the most famous managers of all time, and even was in a he was in a band too, wasn't he? And he did, didn't he? Like, right, WCW music.
He was in the Gentrys. I guess that was like maybe in the 60s or something, maybe the 70s. I can't remember which years it was, but yeah, they had like. I think they had a hit called Keep On Dancing or something like that. Pretty big.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and, I mean, he was real big in Memphis, and was just annoying as shit with that stupid megaphone.
He may be the one manager in wrestling history to manage the most people.
I don't know, Bobby Heenan had a whole shitload of people, but yeah, in Memphis, they always had like a bunch of freaks that would come in for a week or two.
Yeah, well, you take his years in Memphis and like years in WWF and even WCW, he's managed, God, it seems like it must be like over, like almost 100 people, it seems like he's managed throughout his career. He was always managed, he'd managed like 10 people in Memphis.
Yeah, I know, he managed like basically every heel.
Yeah.
And even when he was a face, he'd come out as the beekeeper.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
he was big in the big Andy Kaufman feud with Jerry Lawler. He was a big part of that.
Yeah, Kaufman even went face. A lot of people don't know about it because they only know about the part with Lawler, but he actually went face feuding with Jimmy Hart.
Yeah, and that was at, I think they did a gimmick where Andy Kaufman wanted to get back to Jimmy Hart, so he begged Lawler to be his partner. And I said, the only reason I'll do it is if you, you know, if you get out of the wrestling business and never show your face here again. So he agreed. And, of course, he turned on Jerry Lawler in that match. And that was last we saw of Andy Kaufman in wrestling.
Yeah. But it was good while it lasted.
Yeah, and then the WWF, I mean, you just remember, you know, the Hart Foundation, Honky Tonk Man, Earthquake, Dino Bravo, Greg Valentine. You know, just a lot of people. He was one of the top. Him and Bobby Heenan were probably the two top during that era, I'd say.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And I think he still does. He's like the only person that like gets to work for like WWE and TNA at the same time. They do stuff.
Yeah, that's why I have hope that Ric Flair will be able to come out, because they always seem to work something out with Jimmy Hart. Didn't he get inducted while he was working for TNA, of all things?
I don't know if he was. I'm not sure if he was or not. I know he did some things like behind the scenes, like maybe with music or promotion or something like. But can't really remember. I just tell WWE just give TNA about $100,000so they can use Flair. This is not all
shit. Give them a fucking million. I mean, they're gonna make a shitload of it off the DVD and the Hall. For just people wanting to see the Hall of Fame.
And it is kind of a shitty thing for WWE to do, to announce that before they talk to anybody, because nobody's like, with your main competition, you're not gonna like acknowledge them and expect them to be somewhere if they're working on your opponent's TV. I mean, it's just like nobody does that. And it sucks for TNA, because if they don't let it happen, then they look like a bunch of assholes. So it's a bad spot to be put in, if you think about it.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah. Next, we had Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff again, right in there in the mix in the mid-'80s, in that first WrestleMania in the main event.
Yeah, he was one of Hulk Hogan's biggest feuds. I mean, they made a lot of money together.
I mean, yeah, they drew like, 70,000 at that one show in Toronto that was just like basically just like a house show?
Yeah, I know. That was a trip, you know, that one house show made it. And
that was one of his, that was one of Hogan's, like, one of his best programs was the one with Orndorff, when Orndorff turned on him and stuff like that. And led to the big cage match on Saturday night's main event with the double photo finish.
Yeah. Some of my favorite Paul Orndorff stories were told by Beat Brian Blair on the Wrestling Observer on IATA.
Yeah, I remember those.
Where he said that he would room with Orndorff, and that Orndorff used to walk around naked. So one day he's bending over, so he had a pin. So he stuck a pin on fucking Paul Orndorff's ass. So when the shock of the pin, you know, he kind of jerked up, and when he jerked up, he kind of sucked the pin more up his ass.
Oh, God.
and then basically, Blair had to run for his life. Being chased down the hall by Paul Orndorff with a pin up his ass. And then he was also in one of the most famous wrestling street fights, where I believe it was Big Brian Blair and Wonderful was in the passenger seat, and Atlas and Tommy Rich were in the back. I forgot what it was, but I guess Orndorff told Atlas them to be a Murdoch because he was fucking with the seat. And Atlas is all, don't be comparing me to that racist. And he just was all like raging, steroid raging, and they just kind of got into it. And Orndorff like pulled the car over, and they got out. And I think Tony took a swing, Orndorff took him down, and then just bit his ear off.
Wasn't it something about a cooler they had beer in was splashing ice or water all over the place or something? I thought
that was a story he told about Dusty Rhodes and Andre the Giant.
Okay.
Yeah, where they were, they had a big cooler full of beer and a little cooler they were pissing in because it was so cold outside. It was like, you know, like freezing and snowy weather. So they would pee in that little one, and they hit like a bump or something. Or no, Andre's chair kind of broke, and it went back, and it hit the cooler, and it knocked the pee all over Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah, and then he said, you are blackballed. he will never work again or something.
Actually, he didn't say that there, because like a little later they were somewhere like in New Orleans or wherever, and they were going to the bathroom and they went by this big tree, and it's real dark, so he starts peeing, and the next thing you know he's peeing on Dusty Rhodes' leg, and Dusty Rhodes, he's like, "You peed on me again. You will be blackballed. You will never work in this country again."
You can't pee on the American dream.
He's on it twice.
Hey, I'm going to have to go back and listen to this episode after we do the show tonight.
It was a great episode, and I had to fuck it up and bring the whole mood down. Yeah, I asked about the Von Erickson. He got all sad talking about the. I was like, "God damn, man, you just fucked up the whole show." Because it was one of the funniest Yada shows of all time. He was awesome on that episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Moving along, next we had Nikolai Volkov. He's one of those characters in the 80s.
It's like I think they said, okay, let's induct the former Russian champion, and they must have forgot that it was a wrong Russian. But I always like Nikolai. I don't know why, but I always like Nikolai for some reason.
Yeah, now, WWE. I know he's like in Mid South, and I know he was one of the Mongols, like in WWF, like early on. Yeah,
I remember
when,
I mean, like at the end, he was a big dude, but he wasn't like giant. But like when he was in his prime, you know, they weren't that big back then. He was never like a bodybuilder type, but he was just a big bone, rugged type dude, and he was pretty strong. And
yeah.
He was around for a long time. And I remember I used to always feel bad for him when everyone would boo him during his national anthem, because he would always sing it like really, you know, like he was putting a lot of effort into it.
He was a good singer.
Yeah, he was. I mean, I always like him. And Iron Sheik, one of the greatest tag teams of all time. The greatest non-working tag team of all time.
Had the Heroes of Wrestling, they had a match with the Bushwhackers. That even Luke himself doesn't want to talk about. So, from when he was on the show.
Right.
Got it. Yeah, I like Nikolai Volkov. He was good. He was, you know, just typical mid-80s Russian. So.
Yeah. And then, you know, of course, when the Russians became our friends, he made babyface turn for a while. You remember when he had, like, the cent sign when he was, like, the servant to the million-dollar man?
Yeah, he was, like, he was a million-dollar man servant. He had the cent sign on his tights instead of the money sign, like DiBiase did.
That's funny.
And next is the Iron Sheik.
What can be said about the Iron Sheik?
There's too much to say about him. I just got to see him like that mid-80s period in WWF. I guess he's most famous for, you know, dropping the title to Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, I guess that would probably be, yeah, it was one of his most famous things. He used to go everywhere, because I remember him in Southwest for a little while. I remember him in Mid-South. I remember him in Georgia. I remember him in the AWA, I mean, the WWF, I mean, he went everywhere.
Yeah, he's
and
one
he,
of those guys that
he was good when he was young, dude.
Yeah, I mean, I look at some of that stuff from, like, the early 80s, and he would whip out all those suplexes and stuff. He was a very good worker back then.
Yeah, he was in really good shape. I mean, he was not like super jacked up, but he was in great shape, and just always been an awesome character with his, you know, Iran number one, you know, and you know, and then like USA Haku.
Yeah, I think he's one of those guys that you know, had the character of the Iron Sheik, and he was just doing it for so long. I think he's just become that character. I don't think there's a real person left there anymore. I think he's just the Iron Sheik. You know,
you it sounds kind of funny, but you're probably right about that. I mean, you're probably actually very, very right about that. You know.
Obviously, in those later years, it's all these shoot interviews and all that stuff. He's just a maniac.
Yeah. You know, he did some real crazy shit, but you know, it was like they, you know, him and Nikolai were a good tag team. They had a good run, and then you know, he did beat Bob Backlund, and
I hated when he came back as Colonel Mustafa. I said, "That's just, I'm not that fucking stupid. That's the Iron Sheik."
Yeah. Yeah, I gotta agree with that.
I mean, Jesus,
that was kind of dumb.
Yeah.
And then I knew he was gonna win that Battle Royal before he won the Battle Royal at WrestleMania.
That's one of those years they could have brought back and used the carts. Like at WrestleMania 3 and WrestleMania 6.
Yeah, because it takes some of those guys a long time to get to the ring.
He took a bump off his top rope, he wouldn't get up.
Yeah, he might have died that night. I also remember when he came out on Jerry Springer that one time, and that was funny.
Well, he sounds like somebody that should be on Springer. What was it like? What was the gimmick for the show? Do you remember?
They had some other independent wrestlers, and, like, it was, like, the girl was cheating on the guy, so, like, the guy's out demanding who it is, and here comes Diane, she's walking out.
And when he comes out, everybody knows who he is, too. You know?
Yeah, everyone starts going crazy, and he's like, "I ride on number one! USA, hot pool!"
You know, the Iron Sheik is one of those names that I think everybody probably knows.
Yeah.
Probably one of the more famous wrestlers of all time. I mean, it's the Iron Sheik.
Yeah, and had some of the ugliest boots of all time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's see, we move on to 2006, and the first one is Bret the Hitman Hart.
Well, the thing I like about Bret is because I remember when the first time I saw him in the WWF, he was actually basically like a jobber for like a few months. And he just like slowly worked his way up. He was like the
jobber.
I think it
was after Stu had sold Stampede, and didn't he make a deal for like Bret and Jim and Dynamite and Davey Boy to come in, or something like that.
Yeah, it was something like that. And when he came in, he was basically like a jobber. He was always there were two kinds of jobbers. There was a jobber whose only offense was they'd get thrown in the turnbuckle. They'd get out of the way, they'd hit two punches, they'd throw the other guy in the turnbuckle, he'd reverse it, and that was their offense. Whereas he was one of those jobbers that got a little more. They got to throw in some arm drags, they got to throw in some drop kicks. You know what I mean? It wasn't just a one spot and be cut off. He got like a little bit, and he was always kind of like, they always kind of talked good about him. And then he was a babyface at first. And then they kind of started making mention that he's kind of started slowly getting an edge, and he's going to Jimmy Hart to try and, you know, get more of an edge. And that's when he got put with the Anvil, and that's when he just started slowly making his way up the ladder and became pretty damn good.
Back then, WWF had two different types of jobber matches. They had the ones like on the weekly, like say Superstars Wrestling on the TV show, where the jobber wouldn't get in much offense and it was just like very short matches, or then you'd have like your jobber matches like at like say Madison Square Garden or something like that with like I don't know, let's say Iron Mike Sharp, who would go like 10 minutes with somebody who's considered like a bigger star than he is, you know?
Yeah, like Iron Mike Sharp was one of them. Bret Hart was one of them. Let's see, who else? Salvatore
Lombardi.
Lombardi a little bit sometimes, see, not all the time.
Rene Goulet.
Rene Goulet, Tony Garea.
Yeah.
You know, Tony Garea, Chief J at the end.
The Conquistador.
Doherty. Pete Doherty.
Yeah, that's right, Pete Doherty.
Swinson, dude, what was his name? He was a big dude. Sweet Hansen.
Yes, Sweet Hansen.
Sweet Hansen and Mr. Fuji wrestled many a match on Primetime Wrestling.
Lanny Poffo you could throw in there.
Yeah, you could consider him in there, yeah.
So, yeah, that's what kind of stuff they were doing back then. But, yeah, Bret Hart, that one of the biggest names of the 90s, of the 1990s, and probably one of the participants in, like, next to Hogan and Andre, the second most famous wrestling match of all time in the Montreal Screwjob.
Yeah.
And I always liked him. I knew I just watching him in the Hart Foundation. I always knew he had something. He was just a tremendous, tremendous worker. I was always glad that he was like. It was kind of weird when he got up to like the Intercontinental title level because I don't know. They just like always seem to have certain types of guys they put at that level, and I just figured at the time that they would just keep him in a tag team. But he actually got there, and I was really shocked when he won the world title.
Yeah, that was actually a surprise, especially because it was at a house show.
Yeah.
You know? And you can just, like, every match, you can just see him getting better and better. It's always improving, you know? And then I remember he had, like, he was still part of the tag team. He had a match with Ricky Steamboat that was awesome.
Yeah, and he was a perfect compliment for Jim Neidhart. You know, Neidhart by himself wasn't going to be much, but you put him and Brett together, and they were one of the best teams they ever had.
Yeah, they were a really good team. You know, they had great matches with everybody. I mean, you know, Bret Hart's another one of those guys that there's actually, we really don't even have to say that much because, I mean, everybody knows everything about him anyway.
Yeah. It's true. Let's see, next we got Eddie Guerrero. What kind of sucks how he got inducted and stuff, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of. I really don't know what to say.
I mean, I thought it was a good day. I mean, he passed away like a few months earlier, so I think it makes sense to put him in there.
Yeah, and
I guess so. With the storyline, as horrible as the storyline was that they were doing at the time, I guess it made sense since they were doing that as well. So.
Yeah, they had to do something to make up for it, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, Eddie's one of my all-time favorite wrestlers of all time. I remember the first time seeing him was in AAA, and he was just a hell of a – he was just a hell of a worker, dude. He was like the most awesome dude that they had. And the thing about Eddie is like what a lot of people would freak out about because Eddie's probably one of the most charismatic wrestlers of all time. But when he was in AAA, he was a straight out, just technical wrestler. He had no flash to him. I don't want to say he didn't have any charisma, because he kind of had like a kind of a hidden charisma, but it's not like he did anything to make you think. You know, he did not talk. If he did, it wasn't very good at all. And he was just all about the work. And then they did the thing where, the way he turned was he was in a match with Love Machine, and I guess they were opponents, and one of Eddie's partners was Santo. So Art Bart took off Santo's mask and then started beating up Eddie while wearing the mask, so then Eddie thought that Santo turned on him, and that's how Eddie went rudo. And I always thought it made Eddie look stupid, you know, for him believing it, you know what I mean? But that started like the tag team, and I mean they were just a great tag team. They were just a perfect fit, and Eddie was a straight out worker, and then and Art was an awesome worker too. Not as good as Eddie, but he had the best Bronx Splash. He was better than Eddie's Bronx Splash, but he was awesome. But he was the whole charisma. He was the talker.
Yeah.
He was the flamboyant one, and then like after the big match. In AAA, you know, Bart died a couple weeks later. And then he kept wrestling a little bit in Mexico and Japan. And then he went to WCW where he was, as a face, he was just a great worker. Didn't show a whole lot of personality. And then he went heel. And it's like, somehow, to me, it was like, like the spirit of Art Barr kind of just went into Eddie Guerrero, and then all of a sudden one day they were like merged, and all of a sudden Eddie was just as charismatic as Art used to be.
Yeah.
You know, if not more. And then he was down.
Yeah, I didn't know how good of a heel Eddie was, because I'd only seen him like from when he started in WCW in I think late 95 as a babyface. And you know, years later, I look back at his first babyface run in WCW, I said he was like totally miscast, because I didn't even know about how good of a heel he was, like in Mexico and stuff like that.
Yeah, as a heel, I mean, he was so pop. I mean, he was so good at a heel, he could never do it for long because everyone would just start to like him because he was so good at it.
Yeah.
I mean, some of my favorite spots would be where he would hit the guy with a belt and referee would be out. So he lay down too. So when the referee woke up, he wouldn't think that he cheated by hitting the guy with the belt and stuff. And then he'd be making faces waiting for the referee to hurry the fuck up. You know, I mean, he was just awesome as a heel. I mean, just.
Yeah, and awesome. I think that when they started, you know, the whole lying, cheating, stealing stuff, I thought that was like, if he wouldn't have passed away, he would have become an even bigger star than he was.
Yeah, he'd probably still be around today, you know, maybe not moving as fast, but, I mean, yeah, he was just awesome, dude. I mean, total package, you know.
Yeah. Now, he was one of the guys that, you know, I thought was awesome when he won the title from Brock. Because guys like him didn't win the WWF title at that point.
Yeah,
it's kind of like, you know, him and Benoit were kind of like the Daniel Bryan and CM Punk at that point, you know?
Where they came up from,
you know, like internationally and, you know, just like low card players in WCW and that nobody expected in WWF
I would compare more to Daniel Bryan than CM Punk as far as, you know, no one expects them and then they just, it's how good they are. It's just like, you know, like the cream rises to the top, you know?
Yeah, well, I would say he's more like CM Punk in that he, when he hit on like the whole line cheating, stealing stuff, it kind of you know, set him going forward. And you know, like when Punk hit on that promo last year, like set him going forward, so and being a bigger star. So, let's see. Hold on, real quick.
Let me add. It's also the only observer out of, you know, Dave has wrote some, you know, really great pieces and emotional pieces, and it's the only bio that actually made me cry when I finished reading it, because the way he ended the Eddie Guerrero bio is just like, how could you not have tears in your eyes reading the thing about Stone Cold?
What was the thing about Stone Cold? I never read the obituary.
Oh, man, dude, it's like 16 pages, but you should read it. It's actually really good.
Yeah, I wasn't even a subscriber back then, so, I never got to see it. I heard it was one of the best he ever did.
Oh, yeah, dude, if you could find it, I'd get it. Like, basically, he talks about not far from the funeral, like the funeral home or the cemetery was like a small hill where Stone Cold stood off and stood by himself, and he was, and as you all know, Stone Cold doesn't go to funerals, but he had to come to Arizona anyway. Or it was something like that. I mean, I'm probably not reading the word for word right, but it was just like, when I got to that part, I was just like, man, dude, I mean, that tears came out from my eyes after I read that.
Mm. I had never heard that. Yeah, Stone Cold, that's like me. I don't go to funerals either, so.
Yeah, like he didn't actually go to it, but he was right there, you know what I mean, like to the side.
Yeah. If anybody's listening and has that issue of the Observer on their computer or something, send me a PM
I got the paperback somewhere, but it'd probably take me forever to find it. But,
Okay. Next, Mean Gene Okerlund. Again, we don't have to say anything here. Just the ultimate character from the mid-80s.
The ultimate interview guy, you know. Yep. I mean, the best interview guy of all time, just because he was perfect for that era of the WWE, because he was like a cartoon character himself, you know. And he's kind of like the, like the closest comparison today, I would kind of say, even though he's more of a ring announcer than that would be the guy from the UFC, the announcer for what the hell's his name? I can't think of the guy. Okay, the Ready to Rumble guy's brother,
Bruce Buffer.
Bruce Buffer, yeah. God, I thought I forget. Yeah, he kind of, for some reason, a Buffer and a Mean Gene, to me, he's like a modern-day version of Mean Gene to me.
Yeah, he was, I mean, it was,
he's so excited.
He was
so
interviewing,
excited.
I mean, he can make any interview entertaining, no matter who he's with. And just, you know, the way he'd go back and forth with, like, Bobby Heenan or somebody like that.
Yeah, like if, or like let's say Heenan would come out with like a savage, like Kamala or Killer Kong, you know. Mean Gene always has the, like, be looking at the guy in the corner of his eye, all worried. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, he was
and,
just really good at those real subtle little things. I mean, and made it over the top. I mean,
and still one of the all time greatest live moments at SummerSlam '89. He's about to interview Rick Rude and Bobby Heenan. And the SummerSlam sign behind him falls off the wall, and he yells, "Fuck!"
Yeah, that was great. And I don't know where they would have him, but sometime before I die, I have to have a Mean Gene burger.
And one of the best things I saw Gene in was when Hogan was training him for the match with George Steele and Mr. Fuji in Minneapolis. Do you remember that?
Wait, which one again?
It was Hogan was going to be his tag team partner.
Uh-huh.
And they were going to face Mr. Fuji and George Steele in, like, Minneapolis or something like that. And they had these skits where Hogan was training him.
Yeah, I remember now, yeah.
Yeah, he's sitting there. He's getting up early because they're going to go start training. He's smoking a cigar. He's feeding him some pancakes. And Hogan shows up and tell him to put the cigar out, and then he drinks some raw eggs, and they go running, and they've been running all day, so Gene kind of loses him and goes buys him a beer and a bratwurst, but Hogan catches him and then takes him back to training. And then Hogan's going up these steps, like he's at I'm not sure where it was, maybe it's in, like, in the ring or something. Hogan's got Gene on his back, and he's training, and he's carrying him up all these steps. And then they go to the next scene, and Gene has Hogan on his back carrying him up these steps.
Yeah,
the
that was
greatest
great.
Sight I've ever seen in my life. I laughed my ass off.
Yeah, that was awesome.
I think he's in that Legends house, too, isn't he?
I think so.
Yeah. Anyway, move on to Sensational Sherry,
who was either drunk or high when she did her speech.
Yeah.
I mean, literally.
I think she silenced one of those assholes that was like catcalling or something like that. She said, shut up and listen to what I have to say.
Yeah, I remember that. But, she was she's like probably the first woman wrestler I ever saw wrestle. In fact, for years and years and years and years and years, on the door to my room, I had a picture of her wearing a blue trunks and these like white like knee high wrestling boots and looking very fine and she was. I remember that and. I also like the story of how she got into wrestling was she went to like I guess one of the promoters in like Memphis or somewhere, and was wanting to be wanting to become a wrestler or whatever, and the promoter and the famous promoter I just can't remember who, but basically he just reared back and he just slapped the living shit out of her, and so she took it and she. Took it like a man, and he got depressed by her reaction, you know, because she didn't start crying or whatever, and that she was tough enough, so they trained her to be a wrestler. And then I remember she was like,
I think I first saw her in the, she was in the AWA when I first saw her. She was a women's champion, and
the first match you probably saw was the match with her at Candy Divine, right?
Yeah, that's the only person same she ever wrestled.
In the AWA,
her or Debbie Combs.
Yeah. But
Yeah, but then she came to the WWF and beat Moolah for the women's title in Houston, Texas. I remember that, and she held it for a while, and then lost for Rockin' Robin. But then she became manager of Randy Savage. And I thought she was much more. She fit better as a manager than a wrestler, even though she was a very good wrestler.
Yeah, I mean she. She added so much to that Macho Man Ultimate Warrior match.
Yeah. She took more bumps than Warrior, I think, in that match.
Hell yeah, she was like, she took more bumps than both of them in that match.
And she would do crazy shit. She would, like, if there was a cage match, she'd jump off the top of the cage and stuff like that. My God, that woman had the hell beat out of her.
I remember one time when they were doing the Tuesday Night Titans, what was it, the talk show? And they had, like, the $1 million man coming out, and I don't know if they're looking for the title or whatever, but Sherry was the $1 million man. She was wearing, like, these little shorts and high heels, and goddamn, did she look good.
So that was on Primetime Wrestling when somebody had stolen the belt. The $1 million belt, and it turned out Jameson had stolen it because he was hanging around in the dressing room when the $1 million man and found it and put it on, and he couldn't get it off. I got that episode somewhere here in my house. That was funny as shit. But she was. And then she went to WCW. She managed. Well, she had first four. She managed Randy Savage and Ted DiBiase, Shawn Michaels when he first became a single wrestler. She managed Ric Flair at WCW.
Didn't she sing the Shawn Michaels song at first?
Oh, yeah, that was her. That was her doing the thing.
And then I remember her. I'll never forget the look on her face when Booker T said, Hulk Hogan, I'm coming for you, nigga.
And she had the whirlwind romance with Colonel Rob Parker in WCW, which was.
Yeah.
I was entertained by.
Yeah. And then when Kurt Angle brought her back, that was. And put the angle lock on her.
Yeah, she sang his version of that Shawn Michaels song.
Oh, he was awesome, dude. That was awesome. I wish Kurt would go back to the WWE.
let's see. Next, we had Vern Gagne.
Well, this was a political move because basically this is because they bought the library, basically. So
yeah, some people would say, he was never in WWE. At this point, WWE Hall of Fame is just like a wrestling Hall of Fame for all the pro wrestling. I mean, they own the history of all the main
companies.
So they own the history of it. So they ought to at least they should put those guys in there. So
yeah, you know, he did them the favor by selling them the thing. They favor for a favor, and I mean, you know, I guess people don't. You know, a lot of people actually the Ghanaians are so maligned. Dude, because of, everyone hates on Greg. And Greg wasn't that bad. Greg was actually pretty damn good. Him and Jim Brazil were an awesome tag team. And he was a decent worker. He was just skinny, you know?
I thought, if anybody go back and listen to the speech when he inducted his father, that speech was fucking awesome. That dude could talk. And he had charisma that he didn't show in the ring.
Yeah, and I mean, he was a decent talker when he did interviews. I mean, he was a mouthpiece for him in Brazil. I mean, he's just a guy who, because he was a promoter's son, gets picked on because of that. But he was actually, he didn't look it. I mean, let's be honest, he did not look like a pro wrestler. But
yeah, it's
that's
not like he put the world,
probably
the world title on him. Not like Burns put the world title on him or anything.
Yeah.
He had a good run with Brunzell as a tag team. They're a very good tag team. He had, you know, just some singles run. And, I mean, he was fine. Yeah, I mean, he was. Another thing was he was a pretty small guy, so
I mean, I see some of him in the ring with, when he'd be in the ring with Bruiser Brody, and Brody's selling for him, but kind of silly. But
he wasn't as short as like a lot of guys. So I mean, that kind of helped him a little bit. But yeah, I mean, he was not that bad. I never thought he was bad at all.
Yeah, but I mean, like maybe not so much when he was actually wrestling, but like in interviews and stuff, he's a tremendous talker.
Yeah,
really is.
And Vern was decent too. I mean, and then like Vern was like he was, you know, he was the Bruno and Lutez of the AWA. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He was the biggest star. You know, and it's just too bad what happened to the AWA. I mean, you talk about a company going downhill. That's it.
It took a lot of years for it to die off. Finally, it was a slow, agonizing death for AWA for a while there.
Yeah, it was very agonizing.
and he's the creator of the death hip toss at the nursing home.
The what?
He hit a guy at the nursing home and accidentally killed him because he's there.
Yeah.
I know he's got Alzheimer's real bad now. So
yeah.
He
added
it
yeah.
this time too, but he was, you know, he sounded good and he looked good at this Hall of Fame thing. So.
Yeah, he actually did. He was actually pretty, really good himself, you know.
They probably got a worse name now
because
of his damn daughter.
And if it wasn't for him, there'd be no Ric Flair.
Yeah, and I mean, people
kept quitting. Ric Flair kept quitting the camp, and Vern Gagne kept making him come back. In fact, he went to Ric Flair's house and took him in the backyard and actually roughed Ric Flair up.
Yeah, and most people would think Hulkamania started in WWF. It started in the AWA.
Yeah.
That's where it started. And Hogan leaving the AWA was, like, that started the, you know, beginning of the end, in my opinion.
Yeah, it was like Hogan left. It's like they lost, like, their biggest stars, really. They lost Hogan, then they lost Martel. Lost Martel, and then they lost Hanson. And then by then the biggest stars were the Rockers, and they were just, you know, they were still new. It's not like they had any, you know.
Kurt Hennig was pretty big.
He was coming into his own, but he wasn't a superstar yet. But he was getting there.
Yeah.
But
I like the last, like, you know, year or so when I know Lawler was a good AWA champion. I enjoyed him as a champion. Because you didn't get to see too much of the boring bullshit with, like, Baron Von Raschke. You got to see world class and Memphis guys all the time.
Yeah.
So. Next we have Mr. USA Tony Atlas. A guy who probably should have become a bigger star because of his own problems. He didn't wind up that way.
Yeah, he was like always like on the verge. He'd never go somewhere for like a long time, but he'd be on like the verge of becoming like the biggest star, and then all of a sudden he'd be gone. And I mean, he literally he was a junior Mr. USA, I believe. And I mean, he was just jacked to the gills. I mean, just he was the. In about 88, he might have been the most muscular guy and biggest guy in pro wrestling.
Mm-hmm. I remember a shot of him. I know he wrestled Hogan in Madison Square Garden once. Actually, pinned Hogan in Madison Square Garden. I remember a photo of him pressing Hogan over his head.
Oh, yeah. He was fucking strong and jacked up. And he was so close to becoming a star in the WWF, and then he ended up taking off. And him and Rocky Johnson were a great tag team.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget when he came out back as Saba Simba.
Oh, God, that was terrible. Even Roddy Piper on the commentary said, "That's Tony Atlas. He should be ashamed of himself dressed like that."
Yeah.
And I think he was in the that now legendary scene on the MTV True Life where he's looking for a cell phone. Got to find a cell phone to make a phone call. Remember that?
Yeah.
That was pretty funny. And he had to go find some money to run a show, but he couldn't. He said he always used to hide money from himself so he wouldn't spend it, so he's looking all over his house for money so he can run this show.
Hey, remember that one girl like slapping the shit out of him or punching the shit out of him?
Oh yeah, for real.
Yeah,
I remember
that.
That
was crazy.
Next we had William the Refrigerator Perry was a celebrity induction. He was in the Battle Royal at WrestleMania 2. I think that's it for his wrestling career.
Yeah, I mean, he had that one big year when he basically lived off 1 year. You know what I mean?
He was the biggest name in football at that. You know, the Chicago Bears when they won the Super Bowl.
That's because they gave his fat ass the ball when they were like at the 1 yard line and he'd score a touchdown.
Yeah. He was like, I guess you could say, he was the most famous football player in the world at that point.
In that year, yeah. And then like he lived up that reputation for like quite a while, but he was just a big, happy-go-lucky dude, you know. He was like a living Fat Albert.
Yeah, and he was in the WrestleMania 2 Battle Royal, I think, with some other guys. I think Bill Frelick and Jimbo Covert and some other people
Kevin
were
Martin.
Involved there.
Kevin Martin, Francis, Kevin Martin.
Yeah, Russ Francis, I think, who was also a professional wrestler at one point.
Yeah, and a few other guys.
Yeah, he got eliminated by John Studd, and then he offered to shake Studd's hand so there's no hard feelings, and he pulled Studd over. That was it.
Yeah, that was actually awesome. I'm sure we had a bunch of cracks showing in that match.
The next was the it was 2007, and the first one is the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes. One of the greatest, the most famous and greatest wrestlers of all time.
The Bull of the Woods, if you will. I can't do it, Dusty, but...
Nobody talks like Dusty.
Yeah. I mean, just... I wish I was going to throw the switchboard. I'd play that one clip. But, I mean, it was awesome. I mean, the shit he would come up with, like, Bull of the Woods.
I tell you, that's the lady in the man. Look at that. There is a woman in the man's gun right here in Baltimore.
Oh, dude, I laugh every time I hear that. He'd also say stuff like funky like a monkey and just all kinds of great stuff. I mean, he was just so awesome.
Not only a great wrestler and, you know, a performer, but also as a booker, he was very good. I mean, there's some stuff bad near the end there when he was booking, like, for Crockett and stuff. But overall, I thought he booked some really great stuff.
I thought he gets maligned for the dusty finish. But to me, I thought I enjoyed all his when he was a booker in the NWA. I mean, I always enjoyed him.
Sure, he had himself on top, but, I mean, not like it wasn't over.
Yeah. You know, I mean, he was just the best one for the job. I mean, you know, and just some awesome fucking promos, you know.
Oh, yeah.
There's so many. The first time I actually ever saw Dusty Rhodes was, I guess he was mainly in Florida at this time. And I didn't get in Florida, so I knew him for the magazines, but I'm like, one day on Georgia, they showed the match where he beat Harley Race for some reason. I don't know why they even showed it, but they showed it. And it was the first time I ever saw Dusty Rhodes.
Well,
actually,
I think
like,
because the NWA title was like such a big title, and they were all members of the NWA, that's why they probably showed that.
Yeah, and I just remember that. I mean, it was because this was back when Georgia was basically, it was almost 2 hours of almost all squash matches. And they showed this match, and they showed the whole match, and it was like a pretty long match. And yeah, I remember that. The first time I ever saw Dusty Rhodes was when he won that title from Harley Race.
Yeah. I think one of my favorite feuds with Dusty and Tully. They were always feuding.
Yeah. And I never actually felt like, I don't think I ever saw him really wrestle, but I remember just enjoying the feud through the After magazine, that was a feud with Terry Funk. I remember
I guess I was in like Florida or something, huh?
Yeah, they had like the barbed wire matches.
Uh-huh.
Where the matches would have to end because they were just, they both lost so much blood that neither one of them could continue. So, and then he had like the feud with his name, Kevin Sullivan there too. I mean,
oh yeah, the Midnight Rider.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, Jesus Christ, they got polka dots over, of all things.
Yeah, that was, people still harp on how that was supposed to embarrass him, but he got it over. And, I don't know, for Dusty Rhodes at the time, just the way his personality was, it kind of fit. You know, just something goofy.
Yeah, and, but at that time, that's when he was starting to slowly get fatter and fatter, too.
Yeah. And, no, he's the Dustin Rhodes is one of my favorite wrestlers of all time. I thought he was a tremendous performer, and also Cody Rhodes, his sons. So.
Yeah, Cody's finally coming into his own.
Yeah, you can tell they think a little bit more of Cody because he's got like his own individual single match at WrestleMania.
Do you see what knee pads will do for a person?
I know.
You know.
Next, we had Mr. Perfect, Kurt Hennig. One of the best characters, you know, the Mr. Perfect thing, characters WWF ever did. I put that, like, right up there with, like, the Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase gimmick.
Yeah, the two of them have the best promo, like, intro promo skits to introduce them.
The vignette. I bet it took... they had to like sit there for a lot of takes or like some of those things that they were doing with Kurt Hennig at the time, you know, like running the pool table or something like that.
Yeah, or the basketball. He threw the basketball to himself.
Yeah,
he was just great. And just Kurt Hennig was just one of those guys that he could like. He didn't need his opponent to do something to make him take a bump. He could just take this wild freaking bump out of midair and just like make it look like he's not doing it on his own, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean I saw like a match with from late 1990, him and Tito Santana. Tito's working the leg and Kurt's he's pulled himself up on the rope and Tito comes over there and just like kicks his leg and he does like his big flip bump. Goes upside down.
Yeah, I mean he's
you see guys today like off. You see guys like Shawn Michaels and Dolph Ziggler probably the two main ones. You can see where they were influenced.
Yeah, that's why I don't understand why they took all that perfect shit away from Dolph Ziggler because he was really starting to look like Mr. Perfect there for a while.
Yeah.
But yeah, Perfect was great. Yeah, I remember.
Yeah,
I remember when he was a jobber in WWF.
Yeah, I think he and Eddie Gilbert were like jobbers in WWF at the time.
Yeah, I remember. In fact, right before you even said his name, I remember watching a tag match where it was the Wild Samoans against Eddie Gilbert and Kurt Hennig. And it was an awesome match. Yeah.
And he was also one of the last like really good at AWA World Champions. But yeah, it was going to be between him and Terry Taylor who got the Mr. Perfect gimmick, and they chose Kurt Hennig instead, which probably fit better.
Yeah. Yeah, to me, he had more of the attitude, you know, the character, the bit, say the character. And I remember when him and Scott Hall were tag team champions.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Next, we have Jerry the King Lawler. One of my favorite wrestlers of all time. I love watching him work.
Yeah, he's just, he's like Hulk Hogan, you know. He doesn't even have to do too much. He doesn't even have to have a foreign object to make you think he has one and to make everyone hate him. All he's got to do is, like, pretend he's sticking his head in his trunk, so, you know.
Yeah, he could, just watching him, like, he would not do much stuff in a match, but just watching him work a match, just doing simple. That's why, you know, you never seen him. Like, that's why he's still wrestling today. He never got injured that much. you know, due to his way that he worked.
The only time he really got injured when he got hit by the car.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I remember, I'll never forget, one of my favorite matches is the one with him and Kerry Von Erich at the Super Clash. Yeah. I mean, that was like Kerry's last great match.
Yeah, and of course he had the had a lot of notoriety with the Andy Kaufman feud.
Yeah, they brought him here to San Antonio after that. You know, I mean, he went basically everywhere after that.
I bet you he has held titles more than anybody.
Did he used to win and do that New Southern title?
I bet he's been the champion. He's had more titles than anybody in the business. Because he regained that Southern title all the time, like every week.
Yeah, they bring in Elias or the Mummy or some weird character, and he loses it, and Paris Boba, and he loses it for a week and get it back the next week. The next week, get it back. Yeah, so you're right. He probably does have the most titles.
And he's probably, I guess you could say maybe he was over longer than more than anybody, in his home city.
Yeah.
You know, they just had the weekly wrestling and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, you think of Jerry Lawler, you think of Memphis.
Yeah, and then the fans are almost like Puerto Ricans, but they think it's real.
But yeah, Jerry Lawler also. He's one of those guys that just don't look like he ages much.
Yeah, they're shitty. Plus,
I think he gets a lot of work done because he's one of those type of people.
Yeah.
Also look young.
Yeah. He also has. You gotta give the guy credit because he always has a hot young girlfriend.
Yeah. Next we go to Nick Bockwinkel. It's kind of maybe you could say in the AWA, maybe the Ric Flair of that area.
Yeah, he was. Nick Bockwinkel was one of the smoothest wrestlers in the ring. I mean, he was just, even when he was old.
Yeah, when he was older, he just got better.
Yeah, it's one of those guys. It's like Shawn Michaels, just got better and better as he got older.
He never really lost anything.
Yeah, on the Wrestling Go DVD. He's older. He's wrestling like a rookie or just out from being a rookie, Magnum TA. And Magnum can't keep up with him.
Yeah. And he came to San Antonio a lot because they were recognizing the AWA title at the time, weren't they?
Yeah. He wrestled on TV. He wrestled Magnum. He wrestled Bruiser Brody. He'd come in. He wouldn't come in as much as Ric Flair, but he'd come in and he wrestled Manny Fernandez, and just a smooth wrestler, and then just a smooth promo. I mean, he was an awesome
fucking promo.
Yeah,
he was dignified and stuff. He didn't come off as your basic heel.
He was
dignified and well-spoken. Probably one of the best, most well-spoken people in the history of the business.
Yeah. I never actually really saw them. But I'd only wish I could see the promos that they would cut when it was him, Ray Stevens, and Bobby Heenan.
Yeah.
You know, you got three awesome fucking promos all grouped together. I mean, geez.
And I think probably one of the best matches I ever saw him in was when he had the 60-minute draw with Curt Hennig. I think it was on New Year's Eve or something on ESPN.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah, it's on the it's on the Mr. Perfect DVD. But that's one of the best matches I ever saw. Nick Bockwinkel or Kurt Hennig.
Yeah, and he was 50, mid-50s, late-50s in that match.
Yeah.
He also got Alex of Puerto Rico and James in Kentucky banned for Wrestling Observer Live. You remember
that show?
Yeah,
I got it on my Best of IATA. He had a compilation I put together a few years ago. It's on there.
Oh, yeah. That's right. I was going to call that show, but then I was after I heard the other two, I was man, I better not. And thank God I didn't, man. I might have said the wrong thing and got banned, too. I just remember, Dave, we are going to improve the quality of our callers very soon.
just, James in Kentucky asking, can you say hey to my friend? He's listening. He says, John, hello.
Hello.
And just in that voice, and you can tell Nick Bockwinkle is just like, he's like mortified. He says, you got to be shitting me. You can tell us what he's thinking.
And then Alex in Puerto Rico, he asked a question, and then Bockwinkle starts to answer. And Alex says, gave another question. Oh, man, that was like, I guess in a way you could say, that's when the United Show jumped the shark, because that was like the best episode ever. Well, actually, I was going to say until James Coffey on the show, but that actually wasn't on Wrestling Observer Live. That's just something on another show, but that was
when he called in for advice, because he wasn't allowed to call no more.
Yeah, and they got fucking Adam the producer on.
Yeah.
And he's like, you tell Dave that nickname I gave him is a trademark name.
And then nobody say I'm being like a hypocrite, because that dude's obviously from the South. Dude, I ain't nothing like that dude. That dude was stupid.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. Next, we got Mr. Fuji, probably the recipient of the worst manager of the year award in the Observer more times than maybe Ric Flair's been the world's champion.
Yeah, because they really couldn't do anything.
I don't look at those guys like being bad. They're just too entertaining for me to hate. I mean, I don't care. Fuji Vice, 5 stars.
Yeah, that was fucking fantastic.
Search for Tomorrow or something. I can't remember what the other ones were, but they're probably, you can probably go on YouTube and find all of them. When he and Don Morocco just would go out for these acting roles and just be the worst actors in the world. God.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, there's not much to say. I mean, I think the only really wrestling I saw was when like him and Saito beat Tony Guerrero and Martel for the tag titles.
Yeah, and then they lost it to Jay and Jill's Strongbow. And then I just remember Saito, you know, he kind of became like Rick Steiner, where he was all big in the shoulders and arms but had a belly. But back then he didn't have that muscle back then. He was just kind of fat, and he had that ugly-ass black sock on 1 foot.
Well, nothing else to say really about Mr. Fuji. I was always entertained by him. Especially like when he was like out, when they would do that goofy stuff with those skits and stuff in WWF. I always thought that was entertaining.
Yeah.
Next we have The Sheik. I haven't seen that much of The Sheik because maybe you've seen one Sheik match, you've seen them all.
There's a bunch of them on the Wrestling Go DVDs.
Yeah, I mean, it's typical, like, your Abdullah the Butcher, you know, just, it's going to be a match, he's going to pull out a fork or a pencil or something,
or
he's going to get disqualified and not do a job.
Yeah, basically, or he'd, like, double-cross people. Like, I think he'd, like, had a match with Bruno that supposedly was going to be 2 out of 3, and he'd win the first fall, and then he'd just run to the back.
Yeah, and I think Luke Tess chased him, like, outside, and he hit under a bus in the snow or something like that.
He did chase like a DJ, like for promotion. He chased like a DJ up and down all these streets until the DJ ran back to his like his studio and locked himself in the building.
and
he was just a crazy, crazy dude. And
yeah, I mean, like, I didn't get to see much of him, but there wasn't much for me to see, I don't think.
He's one of the most famous wrestlers in the world, because wherever he'd always go other places, one of those guys that they would bring in everywhere, and everywhere he went, people knew who he was.
Yeah, he was kind of like not as big as Andre, but just like an attraction every once in a while at different places.
In a small way, he was like the heel version of Andre, where he'd go everywhere.
Yeah, and of course he was responsible for breaking, I guess, Sabu and Rob Van Dam into the business.
Yeah.
Sabu was much better than The Sheik.
Right.
Next, we have Jim Ross. Nothing needs to be said here, really. For me, the greatest announcer of all time.
Yeah, just without a doubt the best announcer of all time. And he could just tell, like, some of, like, I'll never forget, they killed him.
Yeah.
You know?
That was his greatest call, I think. Yeah. Because he thought the dude was freaking dead.
Yeah, he thought, that's a damn match. Yeah, Jim Ross is the best. You know, you don't have to say anything.
I hope he calls Triple H and Undertaker's match.
Hope so. You know, it doesn't matter. You know what? And now that they sell those little things like UFC where you can actually hear the commentary, I might actually have to buy one and in hopes that he gets to call the match.
Yeah, apparently this week he and Jim Ross and Steve Regal started as the commentators for FCW.
Oh,
that
wow.
Sounds like
that's
a good team.
Good.
That sounds like
yeah.
A good announced team.
Sounds like an awesome team, actually.
Yeah, Jim Ross, I first saw him in Mid-South, UWF area. And then he came in through then when the UWF got sold to Crockett, he was there in Crockett
like
for
– You know, people don't actually bring, you know, people bring up how that was a failure or whatever, but it's like the biggest success out of that merger was Jim Ross.
Yeah, it's Sting. I think you say Sting was too.
I would say Jim Ross was Sting.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah.
But yeah, he was,
yeah.
He was in WCW for like 5 or 6 years and became WWF in 93 and he's been there off and on really since then.
Yeah.
They can't run him off. They tried, but they can't.
And they try too, man. He's a stubborn old bastard because, you know, no matter what fucking crazy fucked up shit they do, he sticks around.
Well, with this ban of wrestling and MMA in Oklahoma, he won't be embarrassed in his hometown no more.
he's probably the man behind that law.
nothing much else to say. Just, you know, I think the best series of matches I ever heard him call were the Steamboat and Flair series, like in '89. Also, throw in there's the stuff with Terry Funk in there too.
Yeah.
Next is 2008 with Nature Boy Ric Flair. I almost feel stupid to have to say anything about this one.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
for me, the greatest wrestler of all time.
I think I'd have to agree. You know, I mean, Jesus Christ, I've been watching Ric Flair for freaking, damn, dude, 30 years probably.
mm-hmm.
You know, just
the greatest wrestler of all time, probably the greatest world champion, you know, that in like whichever company you want to pick, WWF or WCW, more so WCW, NWA, but I think he was the greatest world champion they ever had.
Yeah, and he's just we don't even have to say anything about Ric Flair. Hell, we've done a whole show on Ric Flair, so
we'll move on next. High Chief Peter Maivia, never saw any of him, so can't say.
The only thing I've seen of him is I've seen like I was looking at old Superstar Billy Graham promos, and they had like mixed in. They had some of the promos with him where he'd have like a little ukulele. And he was basically, he was a heel for a while, but he was like one of the few Samoans that was like a babyface at the time.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, The Rock's grandfather. And, but, yeah, I haven't seen very little of him.
Yeah, there's not much else to say about him. Then we got Soul Man Rocky Johnson, father of The Rock, and I didn't see that much of Rocky Johnson either. I just saw like I saw a little bit of Memphis and saw some stuff on like the old WWF tapes that I rent sometimes. That's about it.
I got to see a few years of him in the WWE, and he'd always like I remember he was shooting with Morocco, and he'd always like be on the verge of beating Morocco, but somehow Morocco like they'd have a cage match and Morocco would fall out of the cage to win or something. But I always thought he was pretty good. Did great punches, drop kicks. I mean, I always thought he was pretty great. I'm actually, like, I always thought he'd, you know, when he left, he'd still be a, you know, he wasn't that big of a star much after he left the WWE, but I thought he was going to be, but he was actually older than I think, yeah, I even thought he was. But I always thought he was pretty good.
Yeah. Next, we have Mae Young. Really never got to see much of her stuff back when she, you know, in her younger days. Just the wacky Mae Young that we've seen for like 10 years, it seems like, in WWF.
Well, if you want to get an idea of the kind of woman she was and wrestler she was, watch the Lipstick and Dynamite DVD, because every single woman on that DVD talks about her with respect and admiration, as far as they don't. It's funny because her and Moolah are like tied at the hip, but they all hate Moolah, but they all respect and like Mae Young.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she was, I haven't seen a whole lot of pictures of her since she was young, but there is one picture of her where she was smoking hot.
Next we have Eddie Graham, who's a promoter, who's promoted in Florida. I never got to see like really into Florida TV or stuff like that, but always talked about as like one of the best bookers of all time.
Well, it was always entertaining to read about the shit going on in Florida in the aftermags.
Yeah.
It was always cool shit going on, you know, the Kevin Cole and devil worshipping thing, the Dusty against the Funk's Briscoes. I mean, that's how I kept up with Florida, because I never got the TV. It was through the aftermags, and he was supposedly a great booker, and he killed himself, didn't he?
Yeah, he killed himself in like I think maybe January of '85 or something like that. He killed himself. And a lot of people say I think Billy Jack Haynes said this. It was because Dusty left and went to Crockett as the booker and took a whole bunch of the top talent from Florida. And I don't know. I don't believe that for a second. He had alcohol problems. He had legal trouble. All that stuff was probably what happened.
Yeah.
And his son became the father of professional wrestling, apparently.
I always thought Mike was a decent wrestler.
Yeah, he was good. He was kind of like a Greg Gagne, you know?
Yeah,
just a
little
promoter's kid. Not much to look at. Although I thought Greg was better.
Yeah. I mean, he was adequate in the ring. I mean.
Yeah, but I mean, Mike Graham, nothing. You know, he was in some top programs in Florida, but, you know, nothing exciting about him or anything like that. So.
He was nothing more than like a regional guy, you know?
Yeah. Next is Gordon Solie. You know, I never got to hear much of Gordon because I came in 1985, and really, until he came back and started doing stuff like in 1989 with WCW, that's when I got to hear him mostly. So,
I got to see years and years of Gordon Solie, and it took me a long, long time before I could say Jim Ross was the best announcer, because Gordon Solie was very good, and I'll never forget like the first time I ever, you know, the first. I finally, after months and months and months of trying to convince my parents to get cable, they finally got cable. And I remember the box still had, this is how old I am. The box basically, it wasn't even the slider box. It was, this box had like 12 keys with a lever on the side with three levels. So if you wanted to go to HBO, you had to put it on the middle level and then push the number 4 button. Teeth. And that's how you got, you know, that's how you change the channel. And it was the first Saturday, it was the very first Saturday, and I'm in front of the TV pushing the button, trying to see what the fuck's on, and I come across this blonde-haired dude kicking some guy's ass, and all I hear is this very distinct voice saying, that's why they call him Wildfire. And he was awesome, man. He was so fucking awesome.
I remember I was watching Capital Combat, and he was trying to get a word with RoboCop, and I said, he must be appalled having to do this bullshit.
By that point, I think he was, and by that point, I think he was pretty much known to be a heavy drinker at the time, and you know, I mean, it was, by the time by the end, I think he was actually pretty bitter.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's kind of sad at the end there, but, yeah, he was great for a while. I mean, and he called suplexes, suplays, and, he'd always talk about the Irish whip and his cash can, and, yeah, he was great, dude. He was really, really great.
Yeah.
He called it like it was an actual sporting event.
Yeah. Exactly. Next we have Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Who?
Stone Cold Steve Austin.
I think I might have heard of him.
You know, actually, I was looking over at the pay-per-view channels I got over on DirecTV, and they had, like, some early Steve Austin from, like, the USWA on there. I hadn't watched it, so.
Yeah, I remember, I think the first time I saw him was against Frogman LeBlanc.
Yeah, that's the first time I saw him. I think that's the first time I saw him. It was either Frogman LeBlanc, or it was, like, a match with him and the Punisher, who was the Undertaker.
Yeah, I think the Frogman was the first one. I remember he was still like, you know, he was Chris Adams' protege, so he was still like, this is before he became a heel, and he became a heel pretty quick. It wasn't like a slow build, but yeah, I remember him when he first started.
Yeah, I
just
remember him starting out doing jobs, some of the bigger stars, and then being a heel as against Chris Adams. And then I always liked him when he was younger, like stuff in WCW when like he was a TV champion or teamed with Pillman. I thought that was great stuff.
That was great stuff. I loved him when he had his ex-wife come to the ring with him because, goddamn, Lady Blossom was fucking hot. She was fucking porn star hot.
Another example is you should not bring your wife to work. She used to be married to Chris Adams, and you married
right.
to Steve Austin. Yeah. And, yeah, but not much else to say about him. I mean, you know, the second boom period was, which kind of got started off with, like, the NWO and WCW in 96, but then when Austin hit it big, I mean, it just took off even more.
Yeah, exactly.
Next is Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, one of my favorite wrestlers of all time, and one of the best baby faces of all time.
I think maybe the only
career baby face that I can remember, unless it was like maybe Kerry Von Erich or somebody like that.
I guess you could kind of say Kerry, but Kerry's career was kind of cut short a little bit. So as far as like that long, let's say, for the longest time, I would say Sting, but Sting even turned heel.
Yeah. I mean, for a long time it was Ricky Morton turned heel. He was one of the top big faces.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was like you have Ric Flair. I mean, Ricky Steamboat is the pure baby face, and you had kind of like his counterpart be Tully Blanchard. Who, I mean, he was a baby face at times, but nothing really prominent.
Yeah. Yeah.
I couldn't imagine seeing Steamboat as a heel. That'd be weird.
Yeah. In this day and age, though, he'd probably just become a heel because everyone would probably start to hate him because, you know, people would boo the squeaky, clean baby face.
Yeah,
but,
I remember he talked to Pat Patterson one time. He said, maybe it's just turn heel, and Pat Patterson said, nobody would ever believe it. Not going to do
it. Yeah. Yeah, but, yeah, I mean, he was so awesome. I mean, and to me, my favorite thing with Ricky Steamboat out of everything, well, so those Ric Flair matches are pretty fucking high up there, but is the fucking promo he cut with Jericho before their match at WrestleMania. That's like
Ricky was
greatest promo of all time.
And then he came back and was great for those couple of matches.
Yeah.
I love that 10-man tag on Raw the night after WrestleMania. That was fucking awesome.
Yeah. It was crazy.
Then the Nexus almost killed him, literally.
Yeah. But, yeah, he was awesome, I mean.
He was one of those guys that when he got out, you know, even before he got injured and got out, he never really, his skill level never really seemed to slow up much.
Yeah.
He was just always very, very good.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, when he came back, it was like he never left.
Yeah. The Cowboy Bill Watts, famous as a wrestler, but I think he probably more famous as a promoter, and he ran Mid-South, UWF, one of the best shows in the 80s.
I disagree. I hated that show. I did, because you never got the fucking finish of a match.
You must have hated Crockett's show, too.
Yeah, but they weren't as bad. It wasn't every week, and it wasn't pumped like it was supposed to be something like major, like.
Yeah.
You know, you didn't have, you know, I mean, I don't know. I get so fucking pissed off because I never get, they built this match you really want to see, and then you get 2 minutes, and then they run out of TV time. And it's just be like, ah, you know.
Came yeah, but back the next back week, about how course, it is, but if you were thinking back then how about how the business worked, you'd probably understand it more, not be so mad at
yeah.
that.
Well, it's just like every soap opera. You have to have a cliffhanger to keep coming back, you know. And I kept coming back. I mean, it
yeah.
worked that in that way.
Plus, they made all their money on the house shows, so I can see why they kept doing that kind of stuff. And occasionally
yeah.
they would do something awesome, like have like 3 title changes on a show during one
yeah.
of those episodes. But I mean,
yeah.
one of the best shows. Like, I mean, just like episodic TV is just really incredible stuff for the time.
Yeah, I mean, they always had good storylines and stuff and good talent. And he made the most. It's kind of like, you know, people say Paul Heyman gets the most out of his talent. He kept the most out of his crew.
Yeah, I mean, look at some of the guys like. That really came out of that area, like Hacksaw Duggan, Dr. Death, Steve Williams.
Yeah. Big Bubba, the One Man Gang, Butch Reed. You know, the WWF killed everybody, killed all his people, but, you know, it's so funny considering how, like, so many of those guys changed after they left Bill Watts to go to WWE, you know.
And probably the biggest name at all of them would have been the Junkyard Dog.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, the most famous one by far.
If you look at the baby faces in Mid-South, I bet you he was probably the biggest baby face that Mid-South ever had. He would probably be
yeah.
number one.
Yeah, I don't think it's even close.
So, yeah, I like Bill Watts. Howard Finkel. I don't know why he doesn't do this shit now.
I know. It's the best.
Like, why they won't put Jim Ross back on commentary. Nobody cares what your announcer looks like.
Yeah. People care about how good somebody is, and goddamn, the Fink's the fucking best. I mean,
it made it, when he came out for Punk, it made it sound like a big, that title match sound like a big fucking deal that he was, you know, re-announcing it.
Yeah. And, yeah, he's always awesome. I mean, he should always call, like, the big, big matches. I mean, shit, dude. I mean, he's just a great voice, the enthusiasm. I mean, did you ever see that internet clip of the wedding?
Oh, yeah, when they were sitting there, that was awesome.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Next, we have Coco Beware. Coco was fine. He's a good little worker.
Yeah, he's a good little worker. He's just one of those guys who got like, so they got like Junkyard Dog and Hacksaw. They just got a little fatter when they got to the WWE. But, yeah, he was great for a while. You know?
Yeah.
I remember him and Norval Austin as the PYTs. And
he was a very good singer.
Right? I mean, he did a good job on the Power Driver song. And, you know, he was real colorful, and he was just one of those guys who, you know, made other guys. He was just like the black version of Tito Santana in a way, you know, make
yeah.
other guys look good. And he was always pretty good.
Next, we have Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase. Just like Kurt Hennig, one of the greatest gimmicks that they ever came up with in WWF.
Yeah, by far. I mean, he's totally awesome.
Plus, he got they played him so much, they let him live the gimmick. I mean, they give him all that money to go out, you know, like when he was out on the town or something, and he has limos going everywhere. That's like a dream job.
Right? No shit, dude. If I was one of the other guys that had been there for years, I'd be pissed off and hated the $1 million man.
And aside from, like, just the character, one of the best workers of all time.
Yeah. Yeah, especially, like, for the size he was. He was kind of a big guy. I mean, he wasn't, like, a giant, but, you know, he was a good-sized guy, you know, to be as good a worker as he was.
He should have been a world champion somewhere.
He's, like, got screwed out of both of them.
That's right. Antonio Inoki. I never saw much of him, aside from a rare match here or there from Japan, or maybe when he was in some WCW to do a match or something. So.
Did you? Yeah, I've just seen like a few things of him here and there. He's just a guy who, he looks like a star.
Yep.
He, the way he carried himself, I mean, he looked like a star. He looked like a badass. He looked important, you know. I mean, He's he's one of those guys who just kind of like commands respect in a way, just the way he stands and holds himself. And, you know, the most famous Japanese wrestler of all, well, I would say he even surpassed Ricky Dozan. And, you know, he had that thing with Muhammad Ali. And
I mean, three most famous of all time were Ricky Dozan, Inoki, and probably Baba.
Yeah, yeah. And he also did a thing where he always wanted to, like, you know, later, you know, he started having the wrestlers fight in Pride and stuff like that, but he always wanted to, that was kind of like, in a way, that was kind of his gimmick. His gimmick was kind of like he was real.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember he was somewhere in the Middle East. I don't know if it was like Turkey or somewhere in the Middle East, and he had a match, and he shot on the guy, and he beat the guy. And the crowd was so pissed off, they were, like, on the verge of killing him. But when he beat the guy, he was on his knees, and he threw his hands up in the air. So everyone thought he was, like, praising Allah. So it calmed everybody down, and they didn't kill him a riot after all.
We have Wendy Richter.
You like, skipped a few people from the year before.
What do you mean?
You skipped them on Eric, dude, because Wendy Richter was invested in Arizona, wasn't she?
It's Wikipedia. Oh, Pat King's family. This is a list down here. They've separated these two big cocksuckers at Wikipedia.
Okay, no problem.
Yeah.
Isn't that your fault? Isn't that your fault? Wendy Richter, you know, probably the most famous women's wrestler. Mula would be the most famous one in the wrestling circle, but Wendy Richter would be more famous as, you know, because she was with Cyndi Lauper and was in the music videos and stuff. And I remember the
victim of the first screw job in WWE.
Yeah, yeah, for real. Yeah, when they had Mula under the mask. And I was telling myself, I go, that's not Lady X or whatever her name was. Because the one before was like, super tall and kind of big, you know, those types. And then it was like, this isn't fucking, you know. So I knew something was up. And then, like, yeah, Blue X fucking rolled her up and they screwed her out of the title. But what I really remember about Wendy Richter is there's two Wendy Richters. There's the Wendy Richter everybody knows who was fucking hot as shit, and there's the Wendy Richter from a couple years before there who was one of those truck-driving woman wrestlers you were talking about the other week. Right? Don't you remember what
she was also married to Hugo Savinovich.
Right? Like, yeah, she was that fucking bastard. you know, that also makes you want to think that she used to be into the cocaine. Just by default, you know.
Well, she wouldn't give. She's drugs, but wouldn't have sex with him. And he thought she was a lesbian.
Right. But she was all right.
Asked if she was like Rosie O'Donnell. A lesbian.
Yeah, but she was pretty good. I mean, she was decent in the ring. She had charisma. I mean, she was hot, too.
Yeah, next is Maurice Mad Dog Vachon. He's only got one leg. What else am I going to say?
He was fucking... I didn't see a whole lot of Mad Dog, but goddamn, he was one of the best promos I ever seen.
He mostly in the AWA, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's mostly in the AWA or in Canada. And he was like a little short dude, and he was a shooter because he was an amateur, and he was a real shooter. And he was a little dude, so he could really rough you up in the ring. And then plus he'd like, you know, was like a brawler type and bloody people up. And he'd cut these wild promos, but he had these like eyes that it's hard to explain. Like the eyes were like, you literally were afraid of the dude. That's all I can say. His eyes made you afraid of him. He was a little short dude, but goddamn, he was scary as hell.
I like when Diesel pulled his leg off that one pay-per-view.
See,
you can't pull a man's leg off. Jesus Christ,
yeah.
What are they doing?
I don't know if you saw the whole Hall of Fame from that thing, but it got kind of sad, him doing his acceptance speech.
Oh, really? Why is that?
Yeah, he kind of kept forgetting stuff, and Pat would kind of try to remind him, and he'd kind of start talking about something he had already started talking about like a few minutes before, you know?
Mm.
And, it didn't go too long.
He's a 5-time AWA world champion.
He was good, dude. He was really good back in the day.
Gorgeous George, another name that's got to be one of the most famous wrestlers of all time.
Yeah, maybe not in, like, today's age, but, like, in the history. I mean, like, you go back fucking 50, 60, 70 years, you know, probably one of the most famous guys of all time just because...
And influential. I mean,
yeah.
That's where Muhammad Ali said he got his interview style from, watching Gorgeous George.
Yeah, I mean, he'd come to the ring, he'd be all dressed up, and he'd throw out golden, like, bobby pins, and... They'd spray perfume on him.
It'd take him a week to take his robes off.
Yeah, he'd make his assistant spray the referee with the perfume. And and then he was like a really good bumper. He was really good at getting his ass kicked.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't, as far as his wrestling, and I mean, I don't know that he actually did that much as a wrestler, you know. I think he's just more known for the persona, Gorgeous George.
Yeah.
We're
8 minutes on the live feed, so let me go ahead and do the plug before I forget. Everyone check out angrymarks.com. You can always download the streamer show at angrymarks.com along with a lot of other shows like the Angry Marks Show and just a whole lot of other stuff at angrymarks.com.
Next we had Stu Hart. Which really all I can say about him is he's the father of all the, you know, all the Harts and Grand Stampede Wrestling. That's about all I can say about him.
He's a Canadian version of Fritz von Erich.
Except he was a lot nicer to his kids.
In some ways, I'm sure he also stretched the shit out of them too, you know. But
I don't think he pushed his kids into like a. You know, into, like, wrestling like Fritz did.
Okay, maybe he didn't do that, but let's be honest, dude, the family's fucked up.
The family's just
as fucked up as Von Erich, they're just still alive.
No, they're not just as fucked up as Von Erich, that is a lie.
They're just as fucked up as Von Erich, dude.
No, they're not. Nope, sorry.
David's wife's crazy... let's see. Okay, maybe the in-laws of the Hart family are as fucked up as the Von Erichs. How about that?
I don't know. I can't compare the Harts to the Von Erichs. Von Erichs are on a plane all their own when it comes to craziness.
I don't know.
Plus just the fact that so many of them have died.
Yeah, that's true.
And I mean, I think it's more of a Hart curse than a Von Erich curse. Hart curse is just like you had a bunch of different stuff happen. Owen fall from the ceiling. You know, Britt having a stroke. you know, the nephew that had the flesh-eating disease.
Yeah.
It was like more of a cursed family than anything else.
Yeah. And the one thing I always remember about Stu was when he was just an old man, he could barely move, basically hunchback, and just could barely move, and yet he's got some young 20-year-old screaming for his life.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Next, Bob Uecker. I thought he was tremendous as a celebrity for WrestleMania 3 and 4. He was really fun.
Yeah, he was really great, and the best thing was when fucking he got choked out by Andre the Giant.
And aside from wrestling, the best thing he ever did was he was the commentator in the Major League movies.
He was so fucking awesome in that movie, dude. He's the best part. I'm going to say awesome movie, but he's the best part of that movie, dude.
I know.
I mean,
he's just in the booth the whole time. He's just got like all these sarcastic remarks. He gets up there just getting drunk. Oh,
right.
God.
And one guy, you can't say that on the...
nobody's listening anyway.
Does he have a criminal record? Well, he should or something.
he was
just a bit outside. You know, he was awesome.
I remember when he flipped out because Moolah was at WrestleMania and they didn't say Moolah was going to be there. He said, the moon is full, and so am I. I got to go get with Moolah. So he left the broadcast booth to go find Moolah and get with her or something. I don't know. But yeah, he was funny. Next, we have Shawn Michaels. Again, kind of another guy kind of silly to talk about.
Yeah. I mean, he might not wrestle anymore, but he's still going to be involved for a while, so he's not even done yet. But
I think he's at least... Like, for the 90s, I think he was the best performer of the 90s.
Yeah, for his generation, he was the best. I mean, and one of these guys who just, he got older and slower, but got better and better and did less and less.
You know, I was going to yell about you about sucking on your bong on the air, but I realized that pissing on the air and actually being able to hear it is, like, 10 times grosser.
Yeah.
So I was not going to say anything. But yeah, Shawn Michaels, the greatest, the best performer, in-ring performer of the 90s, in my opinion. I mean, he was just so damn good.
Yeah, it's hard to think of a bad Shawn Michaels match.
Yeah. I mean, I really can't think of any, unless like maybe one a match when very early in his career when he wasn't, you know, was just starting out. I can't think of too many bad, terrible Shawn Michaels matches.
Yeah.
He's one of those guys that always had the consistently can make everybody else look good, like Ric Flair did.
Yeah. I mean, just from the very beginning, he knew he was someone who was going to be awesome.
Yeah. Next is Hacksaw Jim Duggan. Again, another that cast of characters from, like, the late 80s into the early 90s and stuff. I liked him. He was fine. He wasn't terrible. I liked him
in
Mid-South. He was actually much better as a performer in Mid-South.
Yeah, he was a badass in Mid-South.
Actually,
he was
a
real
lot more
badass
wrestling, too. You know,
yeah.
Back then.
And, you know, he'll always be famous for the 2x4 and his hole and USA. And, you know, he's still over when he comes out than 90% of the fucking guys they have now.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Remember when he found the title in the trash can?
That's right. Hey, the show's going off in 90 seconds, it's saying.
Oh, well, we're just going to keep going until we finish. We're almost there anyway.
Well, I think it's going to cut the show off because this is what happened the last time when we got cut off.
No, I think something accidentally, we might have actually disconnected us. We've gone over quite a few times, I mean.
Okay, I think it worked for it.
We'll know we get disconnected, so we'll just keep going for as long as we can.
Listen, people, I tried to end, I tried to, you know, end on a good note, but if we're going to go off the air, just blame it. Okay,
that's
Moolah Bob Armstrong. Probably, hey, here's the same family for once.
His family's cursed, too, because they never really got a push after except for Road Dogg.
Well, I wouldn't call that so much of a curse. That's just,
yeah.
But they're not a bunch of crazies like other families.
They talked about it on the TV.
I mean,
the curse of the Armstrongs. They can't win a match.
That was like a running joke on like worldwide wrestling every week.
Right? Oh man, and they were all badass, but they all none of them. But when I first started watching wrestling, it was when Brad was teaming with Bob, and they would always, like, I think like 2 years in a row, they would win this. I think they had like a tag team title tournament thing on like Thanksgiving or something like that, and they won it like 2 years in a row. And I always remember him, like, he was like Bob's son for like a couple years, and then like he started wrestling on his own. He did okay like at first. And I even think they did a gimmick where, like, I think, like, Tommy Rich had, like, lost a Loser Leaves Town match. And then, like, he came back as Mr. R. And then they had Mr.
Yeah.
R against whoever the champion was. And Mr. R won, but it was actually Brad Armstrong and not Tommy Rich.
Yeah. Brad Armstrong was one of my favorite performers of all time. I always thought he was just so awesome.
Even when he was a wrestling man?
He's still good. Gimmick was stupid, but he's still a great worker.
Yeah.
He kind of got reminded me of a guy like Jerry Lynn. You know?
Yeah,
guy with a lot of ability that never really got credit for it, or really never got that. I mean, in some ways, Jerry did in, like, ECW and, like in ROH, you know, got a decent push, but it was just kind of guys that never really made it like I thought they should. I just thought they were so good in the ring.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's see. Sonny, Tammy Sitch. She was fine. I mean, she's not anyone like I would, like, remember that big of a deal. I mean, she was popular and stuff, but, I mean, she didn't. Like, as far as managing stuff in WWF, at least, she didn't do that much for me.
Yeah, unfortunately, she was her own worst enemy.
I think Sable was probably more famous than she was.
That's the thing is, it should have been the other way around, dude.
Yeah.
I think. She didn't live up to the potential she had, but goddamn, she's one of the most beautiful divas of all time. In her prime, I mean, oh my God, even now she's still hot, but. Jesus Christ, that girl was so damn hot in the WWF at that time.
Yeah, and without her, you know, like, obviously the big, she and Candido had major drug issues, and that's one of the reasons that she ended up leaving and kind of falling off the radar there for a while.
Yeah, and she's been working pretty steady, like, the last few years doing appearances and... She has, like, no fans on Facebook occasionally. Like, she broke up with her, like, longtime boyfriend, a cop guy. And, she was having some...
she was looking for a new boyfriend, wasn't she? Or something?
She was looking for a new boyfriend. And also she was having Matt Hardy things happening where she was falling down.
Hmm.
And she actually messed her face up pretty good on one of these falls. And, you know, hopefully she gets her act together. She's actually, I talked to her in Arizona and for a few minutes, and she was very nice. I mean, I really, I thought she was great. I mean, she was really cool. And, you know, so hopefully she'll get her act together. I thought it was hilarious at her acceptance speech where she thanked her minions. Because what her minions are the minions are like a group of guys from her Facebook who basically buy her stuff on like eBay or like do
or like the Amazon wish list thing.
Yeah, and they'll like do like, you know, they'll buy her different things, stuff like that, and So they got thanked on the WWE Hall of Fame thing. So.
Oh, that's awesome. I wish I'd have got to see more of her Smoky Mountain stuff.
Yeah, when she was like, what, 18, 19?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She and Candida were in Smoky, when they first started in Smoky Mountain. I wish I'd have got to see more of that stuff, because I think that would probably have more of an impression than stuff she did in WWF on me.
Yeah.
I mean, I can only get so interested in a feud with the Godwins and the Smoking Guns. I mean, seriously, come on.
Yeah.
Next, we have Drew Carey, who was in the Royal Rumble. And this was one of the lamer celebrity inductions, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, because he only did the Royal Rumble. It's not like he did anything like multiples or anything, you know. But
yeah. Now, I was there for the moment when he was in the Royal Rumble. I was there live. It's always pretty cool seeing him live.
Yeah, I mean, it was cool when he came out.
Yeah. Next, we have Abdul the Butcher, which I'll say, like the Sheik, I've seen one Abdul the Butcher match. I've seen them all. I was really never a big fan.
Well, it's not like he could do much. You know, he's so big and fat and heavy.
He could grab
you
in a headlock and then stick a fork in your head.
And he had bigger tits than Viscera.
Yeah, that is true.
And
I enjoyed some of the stuff with him and Cactus and WCW. They had a little feud there.
I just remember when he got electrocuted.
That was awesome.
Oh, man, he sold
that
like
a
million bucks.
That was
yeah.
like the first time I've ever seen. It took like an electrocution to get Abdul the Butcher to sell. Because you've never seen him do it before.
Oh, and he only sold it for a little while because then he beat up all the ghouls or whatever. That were there, but yeah, I'll do that.
I remember when Captain Mike Rotunda and Norman brought him in as their mystery partner in WCW against Kevin Sullivan, Cactus Jack, and Bam Bam Bigelow.
Yeah,
he kidnapped Lord Littlebrook and put him in a potato sack and was carrying him around in a potato sack.
I just remember, I don't know why we brought up, like, because they came up at Brian's wedding, so we're sitting there with Dave and Lance Storm, and Lance started talking about how he gigged for Abdullah in the match. And I was like, you didn't mind? He's like, no. I go, I'll make sure I did a good job because I didn't want him to get more.
it might get disease or something.
Right.
And has a voice that you would never, that doesn't go with his look.
Yeah.
He'd be in the casino, like he'd be playing and he'd have all his chips there and he'd like stick them in the divots in his head, like in the gigs mm-hmm. in his head, and just sit there and just like freak the waitresses and stuff out.
Lance said that he'd sit down in the bus and he'd just start yelling, movie, 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 until they would bring a movie and put a movie on.
Was this in Japan or something?
Yeah, in Japan. He's also in a Bruce Lee movie, and you would never recognize him.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, dude, he's in, I get the names of the movies confused because you know how they switch the titles on two of them?
Say that again?
Okay, on the Bruce Lee movies, okay, two of the Bruce Lee movies have the wrong names. Because they gave how do I explain this? One movie in Japan had one name, and the other movie had another name, and when they were here,
they got swapped.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah. Like if they labeled Return of the Jedi, Empire Strikes Back, and Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, and just would they just.
Kind of.
How does that happen?
What?
What is all the marketing says the wrong name of the movie? Is that what you're kind of trying to say? Or like in the credits, it's got the wrong name of the movie?
Let's say if you're watching it on VHS, the cover has the
wrong. Oh, okay.
Yeah. But yeah, he was skinny. Well, I don't want to say he was skinny, but he was. He wasn't super fat, and he had hair in the movie. I think it's the one where he's, like, visiting his family, and they run, like, a restaurant, and they're trying to send the bullies there to rough up the restaurant and scare them to close it. And I just can't think of the name. But anyway,
Is that, like, what happened recently with WWE when somebody talked about the name was breaking the rules and it's bending the rules?
Wait, say that again?
Remember, somebody like from WWE put out some kind of press on the new Edge movie called the name of it Breaking the Rules, but the name of it is Bending the Rules?
No, because they were actually, this is actually the right names for movies, just they, you know, they call them the wrong movie by the wrong name.
Okay, whatever.
The
Valiant Brothers. Never saw much of them. Is Jimmy Valiant back when, I don't know, he probably acted actually pretty decent here and when he wasn't like home, looking like a homeless person.
I think he always looked like a homeless person.
Johnny Valiant. I guess that's Johnny V, right?
Yeah, that's the one that he managed, you know.
All I know is Bobby Heenan hated these two for some reason.
Yeah, he said they were like white trash and all kinds of shit. And but how can you hate
another Valiant brother, Jerry Valiant?
Yeah, I forgot there was one who wrestled there for a little while. So I don't think he was a real brother. But yeah, there were three of them.
Yeah, never got to see much of them. Next we got the Blackjacks, Blackjack Mulligan and Blackjack Lanza. I never saw any of them either. I mean, I saw some of Blackjack Mulligan like in later years. I saw some stuff from him from Florida. I know he's in world class at times. He's in WWF at times. He was one of the machines. Lanza, I never saw. Never got to see anything of his.
He was decent. You know, he was just a big Texan, you know, with a claw. He was a good promo. And Lanza was, I never really saw much of Lanza, you know, other than him being backstage all the time.
All I know is I guess their biggest run was in AEWA. I think they were managed by Bobby Heenan.
Yeah.
But,
I don't really know a lot about Lanza. He's always been there. So Blackjack was all right.
Next we have the Wild Samoans off in Sika. Here's a kind of even though they're Samoans, I mean, it's kind of weird, but here's a kind of a normal wrestling family. Not many bad things that you hear about them.
Well, there was one of them that was in some kind of robbery, armed robbery.
I think it was Manu.
That was Manu?
I think it was. He's off of Junior, right?
Yeah, and then Rikishi's been shot.
Yeah.
So, not perfect, but yeah, they haven't been going crazy, but they were pretty scary dudes back in the early 80s.
Yeah, and I mean, a family that sometimes I don't think gets the credit for what they, you know, what they brought to pro wrestling. I mean, they've had some of the best. I mean, I think probably my favorite of all of them, The Rock, but more like, kind of like a little bit more. I mean, you didn't really ever see Rock as a Samoan, I guess is what I'm trying to say, like some of the other. I think probably my favorite Samoan performer would probably be Yokozuna.
That's probably have to go with Rikishi.
Yeah. I would just like Yokozuna. I always thought he was a great big, he's one of the great big guys.
Yeah, he just got too big.
Yeah, and like the Samoan SWAT team or the head shrinkers, Samu and Fatu were very good.
Yeah.
Tonga Kid, he like went from like what looked like 235 pounds to like 350 in like a year.
I know.
Thing. Like, those dudes got so big. That's why I laughed when Umaga got popped for having HGH. I said, he needs that.
Right, Umaga was badass.
Yeah, Umaga was. I think he would have been an even bigger star if he would have. What happened to him didn't happen.
Yeah.
Let me see. Next, the Briscoe brothers. Never really got to see much of them. Never got to see much of Jack Briscoe. I think all I've seen is that match in Starcade with Steamboat and Jay Youngblood for the tag titles.
Yeah, I think that's like a bit of the team was just mainly taking on Ricky and Jay. And all he used to read about
Briscoe had a great second. Gerald Briscoe had an awesome second career as one of the Stooges and one of the. I thought that was some entertaining shit. He and Pat Patterson.
I love the Stooges. Him and Patterson were awesome, dude. They were fucking. I love that shit.
Like when they would beat up the Mean Street Posse, and I mean everybody. If there's some people you want to get see beat up, it's fucking Mean Street Posse. Come on.
I just remember Briscoe getting fired up and making his comeback, man. It was awesome.
I remember them. They came out for a match, and Gerald and Pat, and they came out to Real American. When time were Raw.
Awesome. They were awesome,
Jack Briscoe, probably one of the most famous and best NWA World Champions of all time.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people think he was, like, really, really good.
I mean, he's up there with, like, you know, like, with Harley Race and, you know, like, Dory Funk Jr. and guys like that, so.
Yeah.
Next is the Funks, Terry and Dory Funk, and I'm going so far as to say that I will put Terry Funk on a level of, like, a Ric Flair is one of the greatest wrestlers of all time.
Yeah, he's,
I mean, he's been everywhere. He's done everything. I mean,
yeah.
Hard to say he isn't. He's one of the greatest.
Yeah, he could still have a good match today. He'd still go out there and kill himself.
Yeah. I mean, talk about somebody that just keeps on going and going. God damn.
Right? You can write like 10 books about him.
Another guy who also later in his career was able to reinvent himself in like ECW and have a major run there.
Yeah.
And I think my favorite point was seeing him when he and Flair had the big feud in 89. I thought that was some great stuff.
Yeah. And, I mean, he's also, like, you know, he was a normal guy at one time. I mean, he was always a little wacky. But, you know, now he's, like, you know, crazy, crazy. And, yeah, he's awesome. I mean, he's great. Dory was kind of, like, people would say bland.
He's like,
It was like Nick Bockwinkel. He was just smooth as shit in the ring. I mean, everything he did looked great.
Yeah, you saw Terry Funk later in his career, and it's like, you always saw Dory Funk, and he was like this mild-mannered guy. Even when he was a heel, it's like, is he mad? I mean, you really never see Dory Funk Jr. mad, because he just had that look that, just didn't seem like anything fazed him. You know, kind of like when Nick Bockwinkel would talk or something like that. You know, because he was, wouldn't really come off that much of a heel. It was just like the total opposite. It was Terry, who was just like this raving lunatic.
And for his age, he's still very well spoken.
Yeah.
And his wife took some very nice pictures of Mickey James.
Oh, she's the one that did that.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, the Funks are awesome.
That's why everybody brings up Arby's when they talk about Mickey James.
Mm-hmm.
But, Terry Funk. Terry, another one that did really pretty well in Hollywood, too.
Yeah, he was awesome in Roadhouse and Over the Top.
Yeah. The Von Erichs. It's kind of weird seeing Chris Von Erich and Mike Von Erich in here.
But are they really? Didn't they just induct
well, they got them on the here.
Oh, they did?
Do
they have
media?
What's
well, no, they don't have
media. Well, see, then it's not the whole family. But, I think for the most part, they just focused on David, Kerry, and Kevin. I don't think they ever really showed clips of Chris or Mike.
Yeah. Well, and Fritz, too.
But, you know, probably the most famous family. I would say they're more famous than the Harts, really.
Yeah.
You know? You know, Fritz
especially
was a big
for
deal.
Like the golden ages of a period of wrestling. You know, when world class was hot, they were the hottest thing in the world at one point.
Yeah. And, you know, Fritz was a former AWA champion. And, you know, David was kind of scheduled to get it. And then, of course, you know, Kerry did get it. And,
you know, there was that. Those years were just a great period in wrestling, you know.
And really, the and of course, obviously, one thing I think everybody remembers is all the bad shit that happened.
Yeah.
Maybe more than all the good stuff, you know.
Yeah. But I think like the most the greatest world title change in the history of wrestling is like the Kerry Von Erich one.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah. I mean, the emotional one and everything it was, I mean, it was a big
deal. Well, hey, at least it wasn't like the Rey Mysterio when they were doing the Eddie storyline. They were making fun of the fact that he's fucking dead.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, I mean, I've talked about the Von Erich plenty of times. I mean, you know, they're just, like, they're going to be a family of all time.
Yep. And finally, we have the Road Warriors, who, not the greatest, but I'll say the most famous tag team of all time.
Yeah, I mean, they were fucking awesome for, like, fucking years and years. I remember the first time the fucking Animal showed up by himself, and he looked like fucking he was gay.
Yeah, he has, like, some biker shorts or something. He was, like, the Road Warrior. He looked like
he looked out of
a Village People's video.
He was more like the gay warrior instead of the Road Warrior.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another,
but,
you know, I think, you know, we always talk about, you know, which areas have given, like, the best or the most famous or some of the best wrestlers. You know, I always say, like, Texas or Canada. I'd say, you know, like, Minnesota with the Road Warriors. And look at all the people that come through there.
Rick Rude, Mr. Perfect.
Rick Flair,
Barry Darso.
Ricky Steamboat.
Nikita.
Yeah.
Tom V. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but yeah, the Road Warriors, I mean, famous everywhere. I mean, unfortunately, they kept going too long. And then.
They were like a tag team version of Andre.
You know what? You're right. You know what I mean?
Because they would always come into places where there'd be Florida. I know sometimes they go, like, to Oregon. And Georgia, you know, just making appearances.
Yeah, they came the rest of the Sheepherders, so the Sheepherders was on top here.
Yeah, I mean, like somebody like, say, Blackjack Mulligan's having trouble in Florida with Kevin Sullivan or something. Yeah, I'm going to bring the Road Warriors in for the next show, you know, to be my partners or something like that. And being huge in Japan.
Yeah, they were
the only problem I saw with the Road Warriors is for so many years they wouldn't lose and they wouldn't sell much, but so when it finally came time and they started doing a lot of jobs, it like looked kind of ridiculous.
Yeah.
And now you made them look bad because they were losing.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't want to, you know, Road Warriors, I mean, they had some good views like Midnight Express or the Four Horsemen, the Powers of Pain, or, you know, guys like that, and or the Freebirds, Samoan SWAT team. And they would have some good feuds, but, you know, sometimes it's hard for me to get into a Road Warrior thing because they're never losing. Worst is one of them will get, like, injured or something. They're never really going to lose a match. They're not going to be in any danger. But, you know, I enjoyed watching them. They had their routine like Hulk Hogan, and it worked.
Yeah, I mean, they had some of the best squash matches of all time.
Yeah, I did. I mean, just, and you talk about it, one person I think doesn't get enough credit for being a promo is Road Warrior Hawk. I thought he was a fucking awesome promo guy.
Yeah, I remember when he would, like, spout out, like lyrics from, like, Hotel California.
Yeah, he was just, like, pull shit out of his ass to say.
I remember there was one time on Georgia where he just kind of, like, was doing the interview, and then he just kind of stopped, and he just took a back bump on the concrete.
He would just say the weirdest shit he'd say. I can't even do the voice because it'd be embarrassing to do it because it wouldn't be any good. But you call them Zeal Maxi Zoom Dweebies or some weird shit like that.
Right.
And
say
we're going to put your head on a slab and we're going to take a sledgehammer and pound out the gray matter in your head or something. Just a bunch of. And he was always looked like he was fixing ready to explode. Like, you know, he was like Randy Savage. You know, always looking like he was something was. About to happen, or he could like flip out at any second. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
He did once because he almost tried to commit suicide on the Titantron. That was horrible.
Yeah, that was horrible, but
I was entertained for some reason. I don't know. I thought that was just so goofy.
Did you ever see the, God, who did it? Was it Jimmy Garvin video?
Oh, the backstage of the Great American Bash?
Yeah.
I saw some of that on YouTube.
Did you see the part with Hawk?
I can't remember because I kind of remember, kind of forgotten all that was on there. It's been so long since I saw it.
Well, anyway, the Road Warrior's in the dressing room. And basically what it is like, it's Jimmy Garvin, right? I got the right guy.
Yeah, it's Jimmy Garvin. This is like back at the Great American Bash 88, and he's like, just like, I guess hanging out in the back of the dressing room with all
yeah,
the guys.
Yeah, he's just
and
hanging out with
character.
A video camera. And,
yeah.
Yeah, and he's talking to different guys at different points. And Dr. Death, Steve Williams, must have just had done a whole 8-ball of cocaine.
I know he went on a rant about he's ready to go home and get away from Jim Crockett.
He was high as fuck, dude. I think Sting was a little, not exactly as crazy as him, but I think Sting was a little as high as him, too, but I could have been mistaken. But anyway, they have the Road Warriors in the back, and the Road Warriors are making their blades. You know, they're putting the tape around the little corner of the switchblade, and you got Jimmy Garvin's like, what are you doing? And then they're like, oh, you know, getting some color tonight. And then they, you know, show them, make their blade, and they're talking kind of about it. And they're talking all cool. And then, like, you know, Jimmy keeps asking the question, and finally Hulk just looks at the camera. He's like, what's this for, Jimmy? And he's all, oh, I'm making this for Meltzer. We're going to sell it to the Marks. And the look on Hulk's face is like, you motherfucker. He was just like so appalled at the idea. But it was funny when he says, you know, I'm gonna sell it or give it to Meltzer or we're gonna sell it to the Marks. I just laughed my ass off when I heard that. So yeah, Road Warrior Hawk, not the biggest Dave Meltzer fan.
I remember the first time I heard Iron Man when I saw the Road Warriors.
Oh, yeah.
Always loved when they came out to that.
Yeah, that's one of the things that they lost when, you know, they had the one of the most perfect theme music when they were able to use the fucking Iron Man for their song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's about it for that.
Yeah, is that everybody?
That's it.
Okay, well, I guess we're done.
I'll just run down the list for this year: Mil Mascaras, Edge, Four Horsemen, that's Flair, Arn Anderson, Tully Blanchard, Barry Windham, and J.J. Dillon, Mike Tyson, Ron Simmons, and I'm pretty sure Yokozuna is going in too. So.
Yeah, that's what I've been hearing. And possibly maybe Medusa.
Yeah, I heard Medusa maybe. They may do Medusa as well. It's a pretty good class this year.
Yeah, it's pretty decent. It'll be a good Hall of Fame. And next week, I gotta get with him and remind him. But we should have Lance Storm on, and we'll be talking about. We'll be doing like a career, like we did with Shawn Michaels, with Edge, since Edge is going into the Hall of Fame, and that should be joining us for that show. And
that'll be next week, and I'm guessing the week after we won't have a show, right?
Well, actually, I was thinking if you wanted to do something, because I think Craig's leaving on Thursday, but I'm not leaving until Friday, so I was thinking maybe we could do something on Thursday, because I originally wanted to do last week the Hall of Fame, and I wanted this week to be, we could talk about, like, the WrestleMania moment from every WrestleMania, like, you know, just the one moment. So if you want, we could do something, we could do that on Thursday.
Would you be able to do like earlier in the week if we get Craig on too?
Yeah, I guess we could do that.
Like maybe Wednesday or some Tuesday or whatever, just do an earlier show or something.
Yeah, that's fine. We'll work it out. We'll figure it out.
We can do that, and then we can do that topic and also preview the show since y'all be going to it.
Yeah.
And me and Sinbad are doing a post show after WrestleMania, so maybe I'll be able to call in on that.
after the show?
I'll think about it.
Oh, you know you will.
I'm also taking my, I'm also taking Barb's voice recorder, so I should be doing some more audio like I did last year.
So okay.
We should have, we'll have plenty of shit coming up that week, that's for sure.
And
I guess
this Sunday we'll be doing a Pro Wrestling Flashback. We're going to do WCW from 1990, Part 2. We had a pretty good show this past week and got some phone calls, and the great Louis Armstrong called in and sang It's a Wonderful World.
Okay.
I know, kidding.
He called it from the grave?
I guess so. It's somebody imitating him. It's even up on YouTube now. Somebody put it up on, Sky Kid put it up on YouTube or something.
Mm-hmm.
And since there's no video, he just put a picture of me from my Facebook.
I know, right? It's like, what the fuck? It's kind of like, who's going to click on that once they see the picture?
But yeah, you can go and listen to that. We're going to do that Sunday night, so we should have a fun time. We're enjoying going back and watch, and talking about all this old stuff instead of the depressing shit. So,
cool.
Hey, did you watch, you've been watching The Walking Dead?
Yes, it's been awesome this year.
What did you think of the last episode this past week?
I'm surprised they waited to the episode before. I mean, if they were going to kill Shane, I thought, you know, that should have been like the climax of the whole season. But,
yeah, they're going to have to get, he's going to need to be replaced by somebody because he was a, I thought he was a good character on that show. Good antagonist.
Yeah. Well, listen, McGarrell, like.
The big reveal was that you don't have to be bitten to become a zombie. Like, just when you die, right?
Yeah, Shane and that one kid turned into zombies right away. So I guess that's what that guy told him at the end of the first year.
Hmm.
Remember, like,
maybe like some
kind
of airborne thing that only reacts, like, with dead tissue or something? I don't know. That's the only thing I can figure.
Something
yeah,
like that.
And I know the season finale is going to be, I guess, the zombies that are, they tried to stop using their gun so much because they attract the walkers, so, and they gun had to use it the other night, so, and then looks like they're all trapped in the farmhouse. That's probably how that's going to end.
Yeah, I have a feeling they're going to kill off a bunch of people. Like, I guarantee you the younger daughter's boyfriend, who barely comes out, is going to get killed, and then, like, Otis's wife or whatever is going to get killed, for sure. They
I'm
never
sure,
come
you know,
out.
Maybe next season, who was it? Merle the racist is going to show up with one hand.
Yeah, I kind of thought he was going to show up this year, but I guess I will wait till next year.
He was in like one flashback episode when his brother was like one of those dream sequence deals, and his brother was lost in the woods or something. Now, you know, he's going to show up later on in one of these seasons with just one hand. He's got to.
Yeah, he could take Shane's place next year.
There's nothing bad. There's nothing better on a TV show than just a mean, angry Nazi. You know, just hate everybody.
Right.
Always great.
But yeah, Walking Dead's been pretty good. I'm surprised they also killed off the old man the week before too.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I don't know. I wouldn't. You know, in those situations, I don't think I'd have much trouble taking that kid out of the woods and shooting. Yeah.
Right. What surprised me is, like, aren't zombies, you know, like, decaying and falling apart? How's that motherfucker pull his chest apart?
I don't know.
Right?
When it in there that bad, you'd do anything. I mean.
I guess. But,
I think the biggest shocker for me this season was when they had the walkers in the barn. And they've been looking for the little girl. And she came walking out.
Yeah, the ending of that episode is one of the best episodes of the TV show I've seen. Because this is what I was expecting. I was expecting the last one that they kill was going to be Herschel's wife. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Like they killed.
Yeah.
I was thinking, okay, they're going to end up, it's going to end with them killing Herschel's wife and Herschel's going to go crazy or whatever. And no, dude, it's just they had the little girl do it, you know. It's like it should have been so obvious, but then like I didn't even think it was her until they actually showed her.
Yeah, you were. Yeah, I mean, with one of these shows, you know, you're thinking obviously they're gonna find the little girl, she's gonna be fine,
Because, you know, it just seems weird to have kids, I don't know, maybe doing kids like that on some of these shows. So when she came walking out of the barn, I was like, holy shit, didn't see that coming.
Yeah, that was actually very good. That first half of the season, it's like, if you want to compare it to Sons of Anarchy, the season of the first part of the first second season of Walking Dead was actually, it was okay, but it was just there. It ended awesome. And then you had this awesome, awesome series of Sons of Anarchy, and then you just had this very bland, too convenient ending for Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah.
But anyway, I guess we could go ahead and wrap up unless you had anything else you wanted to talk about.
No, we've been on for 2.5 hours.
Yeah. Okay, well, everybody come back next week and we will
talk. You know, if we went this long when Craig was on here, he'd have had to tap out.
Yeah, he would have been hinting for a long time ago to tap out. And he would have been appalled by some of the things we were talking about.
Yeah.
Like always. And then Craig is also, it's just as bad as Brian. He's either a liar or he has a horrible memory, because remember I brought up, you know, we went to the Hall of Fame last year, and he goes, yeah, and the year before. Well, you didn't go the year before, Craig, because you didn't go in Arizona. And then his excuse was for falling asleep during Bill Watts was that he goes, I went to my second ROH show, you know, in 2 days. And he didn't go to that ROH show. So, Craig Proper, no liar. But anyway,
all right.
We'll be back next week with the known liar Craig. Or you know, like to say, I guess it's just he has a shitty memory. I mean, will he ever live down to Tom Zink comment? I guess not. But everybody come back next week and we will see you all then.